Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Congratulations. Your morning just got a bit classier. A media legend, a ferocious linebacker, a clueless producer, and you.
Searching for a replacement window online? Visit windownation.com today.
So raise a glass and act accordingly. This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, let's do the thing on a Reaction Monday edition of the program. How you living, Threes?
I'm great, brother. I mean, how can you not be great with this natural, organic vitamin D radiating from the sky here in November? I mean, it's such a win.
It's soaking up, brother.
It's such a win. I feel like I'm living in heaven until I view on Instagram my boy Sammy Bradford being John Dutton Jr. in Jackson Hole with his cowboy hat on and just nothing but blue sky behind him holding his two kiddos. Yeah.
If it makes you feel any better.
He's winning. Because then you realize $50 million guaranteed off the bat. So when you realize true retirement, like the true, hey, what are you doing? People ask me all the time, like, how's retirement? I'm not retired. That's what I say. I'm not retired. Right. Right? I got a radio show that I'm passionate about. All right. I do games in the fall if my falls are crazy. And it's a little more easier in the winter and spring. Right. But I'm not retired by any means. I still use my brain. That man out there in the West is truly retired. I asked C-Long, what's Sam doing? He goes, literally nothing.
Literally nothing. Golf, I suppose, and then doing
some skiing, his wife played golf at Arkansas, so I bet they go out
in
and golf.
In that Jackson Hole area.
Enjoy it
like.
Together, you know, have a nice little babysitter for the kids. Let's go golf.
There you go.
Oh, do you want to hit the spa after? Sure, hon. Let's do it.
Sure.
Let's go ride our horses.
Nothing to see here. Ride horses.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
If it makes you feel any better, my dad had a straight blizzard, 6 feet of snow.
I love it.
I'm
all for it, though.
Yesterday, so he had that. I'm not quite. I prefer this. It was interesting. We had no Browns and Bengals this weekend, so I was not – you didn't feel like an obligation to watch the NFL. Now, I still had it on the red zone throughout the day as I was in and out of the house and trying to spend most of the time outside. But then you couple that with Saturday. I mean, this was unbelievable. This was Chamber of Commerce weather. So on Saturday, our game was late, and the Clemson-Notre Dame game was late. So I watched a little bit of that noon window, and then in the afternoon I took the boys, we went and played golf. I'm like, let's check golf in November off of our bucket list with the boys. So we did that as well. So it was a fantastic weekend, and it allowed for – the timing was great. Like not having to be locked in on a you love football, but not having to watch NFL Sunday the way that we normally would have to if the Browns and the Bengals were playing was quite liberating. It was nice to be able to get outside and live a little bit and try to enjoy it. You were on the call Saturday. I did three things in the first half. Now, I will acknowledge that when it was 35-3, I did it. And the reason I bring this up is this. I had a lot of pushback of, well, you're not even going to watch the second half. It's 30, you know, you didn't even watch. Why aren't you paying attention? So I was at dinner with my wife, rare date night for us, where we actually, I think it's the first, in fact, it's the first one we've done since pandemic. So rare date night with my wife. Yeah.
Gosh.
So,
good for you.
Right. In terms of just her and I. Yeah, that's right. Get back out there.
We're back
so
to,
we
my
went
wife's
to a place.
My wife's just an absolute soldier. She's just a, we're back into it. Weekly date night. She's like, we got to get out. Boom.
Yeah.
In season. So we got the weekly date night back established. But I'm like, honey, are you sure? You know, we're expecting. Are you? She's like, yeah. What do you mean? Am I sure? You're still traveling around. I'm okay. All right. I don't need the argument. Okay. We'll do it.
So we go to a place where I know that I will have a television right in front of me and still have a great meal, which are my favorite places. So
what a win.
I'm able to watch you on the cast and actually could hear the telecast as well.
I was going to say, it might be the best case scenario for you. You can actually see that I'm doing it. Claim that you watch but not hear me.
I could. They had a volume up in the place. Everyone was into it. So at 35-3, now you're having dinner, you're drinking wine, post-drink cocktail. By the time you get to halftime, it's 35-3. All right, that's good. Well, I'll check this out, the rest of this on DVR in the morning, Sunday morning, which is inevitably what I did. And so I got Elijah put, you know, what's wrong with us in the second half? We give up big plays. So from 35,000 feet and not, you know, a couple hundred feet up like you were at the game, it's 35-3. How do you keep your attention at 35-3.
Yeah.
And Greg threw everything at the kitchen sink, including the kitchen sink, at you. I mean, yeah. He was doing stuff that you'd never seen. It was – I didn't think there was this big sense of panic. They didn't cover. I get it. But it's 35-3 at half. At that point, you know, what do you want? I suppose you want to just continue to pound it up on them. But he threw everything at you, and that Rutgers team is very much improved. I was not in panic mode like it appears many of my Buckeye brethren were.
No, look, we want perfection, right? When you play Rutgers, you want it to be – I think a lot of people had 52-3, right? I'm sure some were worried about the line a little bit. When you look at this matchup, and I think Ryan Day said it in the post-game presser. I was listening to it as I was driving home from the Shoe, which was an unbelievable easy out of the stadium, by the way. So weird with no fans in that place, but such an easy exit. I'm listening, and Ryan, you know, said, look, I'm not making excuses for the guys, but you're right, 35-3, no fans. How do you maintain the juice on a Saturday night when you're used to that place being filled, right? Like, when you're a young guy and you get in the game, what keeps you going? Because our fans are so great that those who stay through the blowout are still going to cheer for said backup corner or backup linebacker who makes a play, right? They're still going to get into it to give you a little extra, hey, we better pay attention. And then that snowballs on somebody, right? The third down, the bells, all that stuff, really gets you going. So that's a real thing. I don't think it's an excuse, but it's an explanation. They had a little bit of a lull with their juice. I think Ryan Day admitted it. He admitted it as well. How do you keep the guys into it? And I think Ryan sent a message. You know, Ryan sent a message to his guys. That whole O-line, I remember it was like the fourth quarter, producer's in my ear. He goes, hey, who do you want to spotlight? We had a whole bunch of guys we wanted to spotlight. You saw it through the telecast. I want to spotlight Barron. I want to talk about Taraja Mitchell. I want to talk about Johnson. I want to talk about all these guys, right? Because a lot of these guys are the future where I've waited around, you know, and I wanted to get after it. I wanted to talk more about Julian Fleming and G. Scott and these guys. The reality was, in the fourth quarter, he goes to me, hey, what backup lineman, what freshman do you really want to highlight? And I was like, talk back. I can't. The starters are still in. He's like, that's amazing. And I'm like, yeah, Brian's sending a message. What we expected to happen as a football team was you expect – this is the way it's supposed to go. And this has nothing to do with Greg throwing the whole kitchen sink at him. So if you want to criticize the Buckeyes, I'm not worried about the whole, you know, the trick plays and all that stuff and the multiple onside kicks and pooches and all that stuff, right, the multiple Frank Wycheck throwbacks. Yeah. I'm concerned that when it's 35-3, you come out of halftime, you're getting the ball, and you're Justin Fields. Your mission on offense is – hey, guys, look, this has got to be a business-like drive. We're going down there, we're scoring, and we're done. Right? Like, we go down the field, we score, and now you know what? We're done. Or maybe it's one more series, depending on what Rutgers offense does. And then it's, hey, is it C.J. Stroud? Which it looked like that was who it was going to be. There have been rumblings that the reason why he didn't go in instead of Jack Miller week one was due to a soft tissue deal. So it might be C.J. as the backup. But we thought we'd see that in the fourth quarter. And what happens is the offense comes out, doesn't go down and score, kicks, Rutgers score. So you're kind of like already in this moment of, all right, put the starters back out there. We got to, come on, guys. Like, let's go down and score. And they do. They go down and score, right? But it wasn't, the defense never did anything to where it was, Buckeye score, stop three and out, Buckeye score. Okay, guys, you're done. And that's the way you kind of expected it to happen. But you have to give credit to Rutgers because Schiano, sure his do. Motto is just keep chopping. Those guys kept fighting. And so if you want to say, what are you I'm not concerned about big picture stuff. What I'm concerned about, we didn't tackle well, okay? Tackling has to get better. That was one of the things that stood out to me. And the other thing, Bo, if you want to criticize, I think that their interior of their defensive line won on way too many plays. Like Julius Turner, I mentioned him in the telecast. He's 6 foot, 265, all right? He's a little quick, slippery dude on the inside. I think he beat Josh Myers, and really Harry Miller had a rough day. I mean, he had, what, three holding calls, I think, two or three holding calls. Now look, that stuff's correctable, right? I mean, you don't know where their mental focus is. You know, these guys are human. They know, like, look, I'm a dude out here, and we have some guys that, you know, maybe you're thinking we're just gonna go through. Oh, they did a stunt. Dang, I wasn't ready for it. Boom, holding. It just got sloppy for a little bit in the second half, and that was one of the things that I think Ryan, even coming into the game, Ryan was concerned about penalties. We had too many of them. He was concerned about what are you talking about? Oh, he was concerned about just getting lined up. Like he talked about, he really was fired up at Garrett Wilson about the week before at Penn State not being on the ball twice. He said his wide receiver spacing has been sloppy in zone. So like there's stuff that he wants because look, the goal is perfection. That's the thing. So we can appreciate the win and appreciate that we took care of Rutgers, and we can also humbly say, okay, there's stuff to work on. There's stuff to work on here, right? There's
no question. This is really coachable. I mean, this is valuable for him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's, I'm thankful to be honest, and I don't want to look ahead because it's a Monday. It's more reaction than look ahead. But I'm really happy that Maryland beat Penn State because I think it grabs the team's attention. I think it grabs the team's attention of hold on, you guys went out, you went to Penn State, you won. Penn State fought you back, but Maryland smacked them around. So yeah. it better be a, oh, okay. Looks like Maryland's found something here. Let's respect this opponent. And I thought they respected Rutgers, Bo, and you want to know why? And I said it on the telecast. You fake a punt because you respect your opponent. If you don't respect your opponent, you go into the week with no fakes, with no nothing, right? We're going to play base. Yeah. We're going to do this because we're just better. We're Ohio State. Ryan Day sensed in the second quarter, was it? Let's fake a punt because we need to steal a possession back. And let's make this thing, let's let this thing blow up, right? 14-3, you look up, next thing you know, it's 35-3. Oh. So you do that because you're trying to grab and really finish a team. But you have to credit Rutgers. They kept fighting in the second half, and we mentioned it last week. This is a team that's going to continue to fight, have pride. They're still very limited at quarterback.
They are, but they've got some dudes, too. Like, Bo Melton's a four-star receiver. Like,
he was. Four-star wide receiver. Isaiah Pacheco. Curry Combs told us on the call he thinks Isaiah Pacheco could start at possibly 10 to 12 other Big Ten teams.
Yeah.
They're running back. No, he goes, he's a dude.
They've got some guys now. And they. And by the way, the way Schiano approached playing us is how I wish everybody would approach playing us in this league who does not have the horses and he knows he doesn't. He threw, I mean, everything. The onside kicks, going for it. Twice he runs the wide check play. I mean, everything he did is what you have. Like he came to try to win it.
Yes,
he didn't.
He wasn't.
He
wasn't
in,
saying,
he wasn't
"Oh, we're trying
about,
to establish."
Oh, let's try to be close. Let's hit a field goal here. Like he said, "All right, how are we going to beat Ohio State? Well, we got to steal possessions. We've got to trick them. We got to show them stuff they've never seen before." And I wish the other also rans in this conference would do it that way. And it was refreshing to me to see a coach do that, to say, you know what? I know I can't beat these guys straight up. I don't have the guys. Yep. But maybe I can make this more interesting. And guess what? 49-27 was, by the time you look at that score, it was more interesting. We said this last week, though, at the end of the show, and I think it's important. Is this a bottom line game? And how did we define that? If you're watching Notre Dame-Clemson and you see this score on the bottom line and it's 35-3 at half, you go, okay, Ohio State's Ohio State.
Yep.
And you're not even really worried about 49-27 because you're not – it's over at that point.
You realize what it is. Yeah.
The headline
it would look much worse
on ESPN.
Wouldn't it, buddy?
Oh, if it was the other way?
No, it would have been much worse if you look at halftime, right, and it says I don't know. What if it says, like, 28-14, right?
Rutgers
and then next
scored
thing you know,
24
it ends up
in the second half. Yeah. To your point, Rutgers scored 24 in the second half. If that's inverted and it's 35-24 at half, you go, whoa, what's wrong with the Bucks?
Right.
What's wrong here? What the hell? Right. What's going on in Columbus? But it's not. Yes. It's 35-7. You got to remember that the country isn't watching this game the way Buckeye fans are, right, all the way through. The other thing, here's the headline. This is on ESPN. Justin Fields puts up 6 touchdowns as Ohio State routes Rutgers. Mission accomplished. Mission accomplished. And valuable coaching moments now for Ryan Day, because this is now 3 straight games where we've given up chunk plays.
Yeah.
We've given up chunk plays now. 3 straight opponents. Yeah. So we've got some stuff we got to sort out defensively as we get going, and now maybe a much bigger test than we would have thought with Maryland this week. So this will be a lot of fun. Lots to get to on this. You will hear from Ryan Day coming up next. A shocking weekend in college football. We'll put it all into perspective. Off and running here on a Reaction Monday. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on the Fan.
Bishop and Laurinaitis is presented by Window Nation. Searching for a replacement window? Visit windownation.com today. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Pushing the limit of how many times you can say the word thing in one show.
That's the next thing.
That is the next thing.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
And brought to you by our great friends at Window Nation. If you're in need or search and replace windows, I encourage you to check them out at windownation.com. I assure you they will take care of you the way that they take care of us, 866-90-NATION. So we did a whole segment and had very little mention of Justin Fields. Well, that won't happen now. What a dude. We'll have Ryan Day first. Here's Ryan Day on his quarterback.
Fields, you know, as good as I've been around. I mean, he's really accurate down the field. I thought the last throw to Chris, I mean, he made that look like it was a 12-yard out, and I got to look back on film to see where it was. But that thing had gas, and it was in the hole, and it was one heck of a throw.
Well, you saw it in person.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, some of them were as good as anything you see on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's 24 or 28.
Yep.
I mean, it's more touchdowns than incompletions.
Yep. I mean, just a complete dude. I mean, the guy is incredible. The comfortability that he has in the pocket there and even out of the pocket, like, he doesn't panic on anything. So that's the fascinating thing to me, is that he just does not panic. The comfortability. He has two unbelievable wide receivers, but it's not even those two guys. Like, he can spread the ball around. Mm-hmm. I think he threw it to 9 different dudes. It's just, he makes the right decisions. There were times in the third quarter you would think, like, I wonder if he's going to start pressing. You know, they've gone down the field, but it's been a little while. Nope. You know, he'll just roll over and he'll make, like, oh, it's 3rd and 1. He makes a 2-yard completion to the sideline, to where you look at it and you're like, oh, that was nothing. Oh, no, it moved the chains. You know, and that's it's just fascinating. I mean, honestly.
For the season, he is completing 87% of his passes for the season.
Yeah.
87. I didn't stutter. I didn't stammer. You didn't miss here. 87% completion percentage through 3 games. We played Nebraska. We played Penn State. We played Rutgers. 3 games, 87% completions. He's averaging 300 yards a game. He's got 11 touchdowns, no picks. He's got a rating of 222.4. So this is uncharted waters for everybody, right? Like, we just haven't had, as great as Troy was from a statistical accumulation standpoint, he's not at this level. This kid has, what's incredible to me is the improvement, and it's no wonder, like, this Quinn Ewers kid or anybody else who's a quarterback and deciding where to go. If you think of the Justin Fields that we saw in spring ball now almost two years ago, year and a half ago, to the Justin Fields we see now, Justin Fields we saw last year to now.
Yep.
I mean, he looks like a pro. I'll tell you, I've been pretty steadfast on this. I don't think anyone can catch Lawrence, because I think people view Lawrence as Luck Manning. They view him that way. But this kid's putting all of the doubt into who's going number two, and there may be some teams that favor him, especially when you watch – NFL on Sunday, and you see Kyler play, and you see Tua, and you see Josh Allen, and you see Lamar, and you see these guys who can make extend plays with their feet as well. And Trevor can do that too. I mean, obviously we remember, but he's not Justin from an agility standpoint. And
right.
I'm just saying that the way he's better than I thought he would be. He's better than I thought he would be. And my expectations were go win the Heisman, and he's better to start this year.
Absolutely. I think that's, he has opened up every conversation. This Heisman Trophy race is getting, I mean, way, way tighter than we expected. I mean, we all thought that Trevor was just going to run away with it. Well, Trevor getting COVID and having to sit out definitely hurts, because all the attention has gone to Fields. And you're right. The bottom line, you look over, like, the headline being six touchdowns for Fields. And Coach Day obviously is exactly right. He's the coach. But that throw he made behind, I think it was Trey Avery, and right in front of Brendan White. I mean, he's looking that way. White's breaking, and he still has the, as Ryan said, the gas to put it in there to Olave. It's unbelievable.
That's the one down the sideline?
Yes, that's the one down the sideline in second half. The one that Jameson Williams, he's wide open. I have no idea what they're in.
How about the one when it's the first Olave touchdown? Where I didn't know if it would
get there. I thought
it
was going to be picked. I thought it was going to be picked.
That had a little bit of tempo to it as well.
Yeah.
And now Olave adjusted a little, but still, I mean, that was, that one was there too. I mean, he, He just can make every throw. And I think you hit on something on the broadcast, and you just hit on it here that's really, really different and important. He is calm.
Yes.
He's calm in the pocket, man.
Yes, he is.
He feels like he knows everything. It feels like he's two steps ahead of you and three steps ahead of Secret Service. He knows what's happening. He knows what's going to happen. He knows his reads. There's no jitter to him in the pocket at all. His feet are locked, man. It's something. And I think the Heisman conversation for him is going to be an interesting one, because Trevor Lawrence lost his opportunity against Notre Dame. That would have been a big opportunity for him.
Yeah, it would have been.
To play. I mean, everyone watched that game. That would have been a big game for him. And by the way, and we'll talk about that coming up here in a second, that game, Trevor Lawrence doesn't play defense. But
right.
And the other kid was good. But that being said, Lawrence lost that game. So both Lawrence and Justin are going to play the majority of their next few games largely in a vacuum, with this one caveat. Thanks to Big Noon Kickoff, we're going to see this Buckeye team, like, you know, Indiana's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know that's going to be.
Yep.
So there's going to be, and this game with Maryland, this is a pretty good job out of the Big Ten to get this game.
Yeah. They grabbed it when they had the opportunity. They didn't,
a lot of juice to it now.
I don't think anybody really expected Maryland to go to Penn State and win, but they grabbed it with that expectation. And who knows? I mean, there's some games that have come up now that you're like, gosh, nobody thought that was going to be a game. And, I mean, if you look at the whole Big Ten West, it is in a unique place right now, because you don't know what Wisconsin is. Are they still the favorite? Are they playing this week against Michigan? How will they
Michigan's
look?
Michigan's hoping they're not playing, so they
right.
don't lose.
Michigan's hoping they get a no contest, because that'd be better than the way it's gone for them the last few weeks. I mean, I told you, the Hoosiers are the second best team in the Big Ten East.
I mean, we're going to spend some time on this in the 10 o'clock hour because of what
you
happened
hate when
in the
I
Big
say
Ten
it, but it's true.
No, I hate what I hate because I think it's bad for the league.
Of course, you hate the reality of it. I do too, because you want it to be what we all want it to be, is
right.
Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and we want us to win every single game, but you want us to beat the team up north by. I'm not one of these people who's like celebrating the fact that they lost. There'll be a lot of Ohio State fans that are celebrating that they lost and that it's going terrible for them. I will not be one of them.
No, I won't either.
I root for them every single time they play until they play us, and I want it to be a classic. I want it to be a 42-39. That's what I want. I want it to be those, because you know what? Because then it feels like you did it. You stuck it to them. You gave it, you know. Indifference is not what we want out of them. What we have right now is indifference. You have a fan base that we have beaten to a pulp to where they are like, eh, I mean, we're okay with 10 and whatever. We're okay with, this is just a COVID year. We'll be, where's the outcry? Where's the screaming from the mountaintops for change? There is none. We have beaten them to indifference. Is that what you want out of your greatest rivalry? Because no one's going to pay attention to it. If you're Fox right now, who always goes after that game, what if you're ESPN or Fox one of these years coming up, when are they finally going to say, you know what, let's not take OSU-Michigan first?
Well,
it's just not a
game
anymore.
Yeah, you're right. And I think you're starting to be so removed from their greatness. It's starting to be so far in the rear view, you know? And they're trending so bad in the wrong direction that the powers in this league are, frankly, and we're going to get to that in 10 o'clock. But in terms of showcase games for Justin, this one that you're going to call on Saturday, it's going to have some eyeballs.
Yeah.
It helps that Tagovailoa is in this game. Everybody knows that name.
Yep.
Everybody knows his brother. That helps. There's a little juice to that. I think people, if you watch college football, you know what Loxley's done in recruiting. So you know he's got some dudes on the outside.
He's got a good freshman wide receiver, I'll tell you that much.
Yep. That chose them over LSU. So he's got some dudes who can make some plays. And I'm not, my threat level is not there. But I do think that this game will have a little bit of juice to it. It'll be a big game at Maryland. Huge game for Maryland. So, and they're coming off a nice win. So, this will be a big one for the Buckeyes to pay attention to. We will get into that. We'll do a little autopsy of what happened in the Big Ten coming up at the 10 o'clock hour. Coming up next, the top of the polls shaken up as Clemson loses to Notre Dame. What does this do for the Buckeyes? What does it do for the Fighting Fickles? What does it do for the playoff picture? We get into that coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
The best thing about watching football all weekend is talking about all the football you watched all weekend. This is Reaction Monday.
Sponsored by Taco Bell.
The Fan.
top shelf conversation from top shelf gentlemen.
That's a pretty emphatic situation.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, here's what's up on a Monday. A shakeup at the top of the polls. We'll do higher or lower in the 11 o'clock hour, but Alabama ascends to number one. Mm. It is the 13th straight season that Alabama has spent, consecutive season, that Alabama has spent at least 1 week at number one.
Oh, is that good?
Pretty remarkable thing to do, to be number one at least 1 week in 13 straight seasons. They do so because Clemson loses in double overtime to Notre Dame in a game that was really fun. It was a really fun game, classic game, and one that you and I kind of saw that one coming, that would be that way, that Clemson's secondary pretty banged up. And we also, I think we really nailed this one because we didn't think it would be DJ Uiagalelei's problem. He was good. It wasn't his fault. It was far from it. It was Notre Dame was able to go up and down the field on Clemson. They were able to run it. They were able to throw it. They were able to do whatever they want. And so Alabama ascends to number one. And so now you look at the playoff picture and you say to yourself, all right, well, clearly Ohio State and Alabama are in, right? Went out, you're in, no doubt. And I think Alabama, even with a loss, would be probably in. This does muddy the water a little bit, though, for everybody else, because Clemson is going to get another crack at Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those times where Notre Dame wishes they weren't in the conference. They like the conference up until they're going to have to play Clemson again. Now, they beat them again, Clemson's done, clearly. But if Clemson wins with Trevor Lawrence in the ACC championship game, in a similar type game, and Notre Dame has just the one loss in the ACC championship game, and on their resume is a win over Clemson, even without Lawrence, now you're getting into some interesting issues here. So who are the other contenders? Texas A&M?
Yeah.
Probably just going to have the one loss. They were impressive against South Carolina this weekend.
Although I think for the scenario on where you're going, they will be eliminated by, you know, A told B and B told C, meet you at the top of the coconut tree if you have that book. Chicka chicka boom boom. You know what I mean? Like, if you're a dad, you have that book and you know it. Here's why I say that. I know where you're going with this argument.
Yeah.
So the other contenders, we mentioned it, one loss Alabama. Who would they lose to? Florida. Florida's SEC champ. Alabama has one loss. That eliminates A&M because they lost head-to-head to Bama. Boom. A&M's out. Aggies bye.
I would agree. Yeah. So Florida, Texas A&M, and Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Those are the contenders. Yep. Fighting Fickles.
Yep.
Contender. Uphill road. I think you'd rather have had Clemson beat Notre Dame and then Notre Dame's out.
Yep.
If you're the Fighting Fickles. So this prolongs, but I don't think Notre Dame's unimpeachable. I mean, I think they could lose another game down the road. They're not a.
It'd be very Notre Dame-like to drop one after just beating them, you know?
Right. I mean, they did that in 93. They beat Florida State in 93. The next week, they lose to Boston College. So there's precedent for that. I think, honestly, the most I would love to see BYU play Cincinnati as like a play-in game. I know I can't arrange it. I would love to see those two teams play because I watched some of BYU on Friday night. They're impressive. They're really physical. The kid can spin it at quarterback, the Wilson kid. They're good. Now, they have a bye week, I think, six out of the next 8 weeks, and they've already played eight games. BYU has.
Which is amazing. They just powered through.
Yeah, right. But they're now off. So, like, basically, and I saw somebody tweet this over the weekend. So, like, if a Pac-12 school can't play, just play BYU.
Yes. They'll play you.
They're ready.
They'll play you. They'll love to add that to the resume.
They're good to go. Yeah.
You know? I mean, honestly, I think BYU's just like, we'll play anybody, anywhere. You just give us a week or two. We'll be fine.
Yeah. So, like, that
Nebraska would have tried to, but, you know, we would have said no.
Right. The Washington-Cal game that was canceled because of the Cal. Yep. Maybe instead, next, if that happens in the future, maybe BYU goes and plays Washington.
Yeah. We'll see if the Pac-12 would allow that to happen.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because you want these teams to have games. Oregon was impressive. Their first time out, we've seen that.
So with Notre Dame being ranked second now.
Right.
What it does is, what makes me curious, if Notre Dame rolls the rest of the way through, the biggest argument's going to be one loss Alabama. If Florida beats Alabama, it's one loss Bama. Right, say you have a scenario versus one loss Notre Dame and a tight game with Trevor Lawrence at quarterback and they've beaten Clemson before. Is it the one loss Notre Dame or is it one loss Alabama? That is going to be the most heated if it happened. I don't think Bama's losing to Florida, by the way.
But I don't either.
That would be one of the most heated arguments. So if you're Notre Dame, what you're hoping for, Bama runs the table. Because then your debate is, gosh, it's still a great debate. Because Texas A&M can say, the only team we lost to,
right,
we beat the SEC East champs in Florida. The only team we lost to is the number one team in the country.
Right.
And Notre Dame can say, the only team we lost to, and we actually beat them, so we actually went, we washed, was the number two team, number three, number four, whatever they end up being,
whatever
right?
They end up,
team in the country. And so that would be another fascinating thing. That would be a, I tell you what, though. If Notre Dame beats Clemson, which I don't think it's actually, because it's a point you mentioned, it was the secondary. It wasn't DJ ukulele at all. It was the whole secondary for Clemson. If Notre Dame beats them again, can you imagine, like, Bodie and all the other Notre Dame fans? We have one on our staff. He's our spotter, Bob Lanigan. Huge, huge Fighting Irish fan. Great guy.
Yeah.
Can you imagine them that the 1 year they join a conference due to a pandemic, they win said conference and beat Clemson twice and then bow out. Like, told you won't win a conference. We're out. Peace. Gosh, can you imagine the just.
No. Yeah.
Oh.
So what stands in their way? They go to Boston College, to North Carolina.
Watch out for Boston College. They have a
bye week in between. And obviously North Carolina hasn't played well, but Sam Howell's still a big-time quarterback, and they've got some weapons. So I agree with you with Halfley and BC. So those are two challenging games, and it's Syracuse at home, then it's at Wake. So that's what stands in the way of Notre Dame and getting to the ACC title game as the number two team in the country at that point, if they went out. And then the ACC has something they've never had, which an ACC championship game with a lot of juice. I mean, usually that game's like at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, it's a nonsense game in Charlotte. Now all of a sudden you'd be talking about number two against number four probably at that time with Lawrence back. Man. I mean, that game would have all of the juice, and they've never had that.
Yep.
It's always the SEC or the Big Ten game that has all the juice on that weekend, and they would have all of it if they're able to get to that point. It also sets a table for Lawrence in the Heisman, because now all of a sudden if he play, that'll be right before the Heisman. I would assume the Heisman votes will go in that weekend, always do, that it'll be a chance for Lawrence against Notre Dame to say, well, I can be the difference and watch what I can do against these guys. So there's a lot at stake there. I tend to agree with you. I think you can kind of narrow it down in terms of who's in this thing. And I do think Cincinnati's still in this thing. I think Cincinnati and BYU are both obviously on the outside looking in. But it's Notre Dame, it's Texas A&M, it's Florida, it's Alabama, it's us, and it's Clemson. Those are the six that you're going to be talking about here. It's a fascinating one. I love the fact that we have
more teams now, because, you know, you thought coming in, the Trevor COVID thing gave you this opportunity, although I'm not so sure it's as slam dunk that Clemson's going to win with him back, but they have been there before. They have championship pedigree, and maybe it gives the team a little more confidence, a little more looseness, thinking, gosh, we have to play perfect defensively because we got the young kid in, right? You don't know what it does for that team, mentally, but I'm glad that it's not just, oh, well, we have Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama. No, we got a little bit of a debate, which will be exciting. I just hope that we're not, I hope we just keep winning. Just keep winning. Like, what is it? Dory? Finding Dory? Yeah. Just keep swimming. Yeah. Kids movies, man. Just keep winning and you're in. And then we can let everyone else scream at each other. We can let the Fighting Irish fans go through it battling A&M. Cause I think that's going to be the one. That's going to be the conversation.
Yeah, I agree, and I think Notre Dame would go. I do. I think if they play competitively with Clemson in that championship game, and I think they will. They're really well coached. It's a big deal for them. That's a big win for them, for that program, because here's the thing. You go back to it. If you go back to our conversation Thursday and Friday about Notre Dame, are they bullied? Because they've been bullied against these type of teams before. They were not bullied. They were not bullied on the offensive defensive line. They were fine on the perimeter. Their running back was the best back. I mean, Etienne didn't do anything. Clemson ran it 33 times for 34 yards.
Mm.
And they've got a first-round pick tailback in Travis Etienne. 33 times for 34 yards. They can't run it. So Notre Dame hung.
Clemson also couldn't do a pitch play, it seems like. They can't pitch the ball.
No. I do like that DJ kid, though. That kid's going to be – he's
going to be a deal.
Yeah. I like him quite a bit. All right, so we saw Clemson. Alabama was off this weekend. Is Ohio State on track to be at that level? Seems like it. What needs to be improved? We will do that coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Want to know anything about the fans' contest, how to win, or what's up for grabs? Check out 971thefan.com. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Two legends, one show.
Well, it's all a lie.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, Three. So we've had the Heisman conversation. We've had, I think, a pretty reasoned look at what happened, against Rutgers in the second half, especially in the fourth quarter. And we've talked a little bit about Clemson. Bama was off this week. So then the question becomes, is this team on track to accomplish its goals, which are go win a national championship? If they're not, and I think they are, I'm sure you feel that way as well, what needs to get better as you've seen them in person?
Oh, man. Well, you worry about the front, the offensive front a little bit just because, and look, I think it's more of a mental lapse this week versus Rutgers,
yeah.
But because they played so well against Penn State, against better talent, and then you would argue week one against Nebraska where they really elite, well, PFF thought so, they let up some negative plays. You worry, and I know this is what Ryan worried about, that hit that he took late, Justin took late against Penn State, the sack that he took against Rutgers there early in that game. You know, if any of those end up being hit ball out, right? Like Justin,
yeah.
his ability to hold on to the ball has been unbelievable in those situations. But when you're going against the Clemsons or the Notre Dames or the Alabamas, that ball comes out and it's a turnover. Are you able to overcome those against those talented type of teams versus – the lesser talented teams that we've been playing. That's probably an issue. The tackling concerned me against Rutgers. It just wasn't even a tackle. It was just bad angles. The punt return for a touchdown by Bo Melton. You had it snuffed out. Tuff did a good job forcing it back. Everybody else just took a really bad angle, to the football. But, bad angles, it doesn't matter if it's a missed tackle or bad angles. It just looked poor. Those are the areas. I think we can run the football. I think it's going to look different all year long, guys. We're not going to have the 200-yard performance by one guy. I don't see it. But I will say Rutgers, was really good at stopping the run, albeit it was against, Indiana and who they play with, well, Michigan State. So I'm still torn on how to evaluate the run game, because especially after talking to Ryan, like Master does some stuff for us that is different. He mentioned that he keeps us on track, keeps Ohio State ahead of the chains. Mm-hmm. He mentioned that, we don't really talk about it a whole lot around here because of the fact that we're usually not needing to worry about time of possession per se, but
yeah.
He's a guy that as you do face Clemson, as you do face Notre Dame or whoever you're going to play, that he's going to get you to second and five more often than not. And so it might not be, oh, look at the 15, 20-yard burst through the line. Oh, if we're always operating in second and five, second and six,
yeah.
And we're able to bleed the clock if we need to when talent equates, he's the perfect back for it. So there's a lot here. It just looks different as far as what the ground game looks like. I don't know if it's better or worse. It's not as electric. Put it that way. You're not holding your breath.
You got to go back a while, don't you, bud? I mean, you got to go back to some of those – right after you got done, like after Beanie, when you had Brandon and you had Boom and then after, and then it was, Jordan Hall and it was Carlos Hyde and it was, it's not, we've been so spoiled to be able to do, Zeke to JK with Mike Weber in there as
and
well.
Even Carlos Hyde. I mean,
and even
Carlos
Hyde,
is playing in the league still,
pro,
right?
Yeah,
I mean,
Carlos too. So to go Carlos, Zeke, Carlos, Zeke, JK with Mike Weber in there as well is, that's just elite. And I think the same thing is true with on defensive end. You're not entitled to go Bosa, Chase Young. I mean, we did, but that's such an incredible thing to be able to pull off, to identify five-star players, develop them, and have them make that type of impact. And I think the same is true of their backs. These are really nice backs. They're just not the home run hitters that we've had where they can take it 80. Which is fine. It's just going to be a little different way about it. But I think that's a really important point because what you're trying to evaluate, and the point you make on Teague, that you're trying to evaluate when you play Bama and you need to be in second and five, he'll get you the five.
Yes,
he will. Be an advantageous. So that's a critical thing for him and for this team going forward. We will hand out some awards coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. You said when talent equates, well, one thing you can say emphatically is that talent will not equate in the Big Ten this year. What a disaster for the powerhouses in this league, not named Ohio State over the weekend. How bad is it at Michigan, at Nebraska, at Penn State? We get into all of that coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus. The Fan. Sports Center.
Good morning, I'm Matt Andrews. The Buckeyes third in the AP and coaches poll after their win over Rutgers Saturday night. Alabama number one. Notre Dame vaults to number two after their win over previous number one Clemson. The Tigers are fourth. A&M fifth. Cincinnati checks in at seventh. Indiana in 2 weeks ranked 10th. Players of the game for OSU over the win over Rutgers Saturday on offense, Justin Fields, and right tackle Nicholas Petit-Friere. On defense and special teams, linebacker Tuff Borland. Sunday night game last night billed as Brady versus Breeze, and the Saints' Breeze won in a no contest. He threw for four scores and a 38-3 spanking of the Bucks. Tom Brady threw three picks. Monday Night Football tonight, Patriots visit the Jets. We'll have it at 8 here on The Fan. This update brought to you by The Basement Doctor, Central Ohio's most trusted name for your home since 1987. Visit basementdoctor.com. Breaking sports news on The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Well-dressed, well-spoken, but never, ever a well-drink.
How about chaos?
Insanity. Absolute insanity.
You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Even as bad as you thought it was at Michigan, this is something else. You know, you sensed it when you just saw Harbaugh talk in the lead up to the season, even after they beat Minnesota. I've used this word for much of the season, defeated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it feels like he's just done. Like he's smoked, he's done, he's defeated. It is a stunning turn of events. It's a stunning turn of events to think about where they were when Curtis Samuel walked off and beat him, and what you felt like they were on. Do you remember, my gosh, I know that you do, that Don Brown defense and all of the stuff that they had that we kept hearing about, that they had those things, and they did it without having, you know, a true quarterback. So you thought, boy, if he ever just gets the quarterback right, they're going to be something, because they had talent on their defensive line. They had talent at linebacker in the secondary, Devin Bush. I mean, a lot of dudes that were playing for them. And you look at where they are now, dude, they were whipped by Indiana. You were right. I didn't allow – I just thought, boy, if you have any guts at all, you handle Indiana, if you have any guts.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't. They didn't. It's not like they're not recruiting well. They are. They're recruiting fine. They have five-star kids. They have four-star kids. They have plenty to be able to be contenders. And they don't have any heart, man, and they don't have any guts. And they're a program in free fall now. Free fall.
When is Don Brown going to abandon his man principle? You could sense who was it, Brock Heward on the call? You could sense.
Yeah, I think it was Brock.
You could sense whoever was the analyst kept saying, like, sooner or later you have to realize that you're getting beat because your guys aren't executing what you want them to do.
Yeah.
So you have to change. And so I don't know, you know, as I sit here today, they play Wisconsin. That team's not beating Wisconsin.
No.
So it depends if they play that game. And then the following week, like, you just wonder what's the give a crap level. They lose to Wisconsin, they go down, I mean, I think it's like Wisconsin, then they play Rutgers, which, you know, Shannon's going to fake every single thing in the book against them, too.
Rutgers is more impressive than Michigan. Rutgers beat Michigan State. Michigan lost to Michigan State.
I can't even say that sentence right. It's insane. It's insane where they're at, and that's where we are with the program. And so it needs an influx of juice, you know, and you're seeing that. You're right. There's no swag to the program. Like, when he first got there, there was, and it's just all been beat out of him. It's kind of like, if you want to find an individual equivalent to it, the closest thing I could think of is like earlier this year when Baker looked like he had no swag, when Baker Mayfield lost all of his juice.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like. Like, come on. Like, where's your zest? Where's your enthusiasm, unknown to mankind? Like,
it's gone.
It is gone. It is.
Yeah.
Gone.
I think if you go back and you do an autopsy, I mean, clearly this is the end of him. Right? I mean, there's no way. They don't have a contract beyond next year between him and them. There's no way that they as a university could justify paying him what he's being paid. Is it $7.5 million a year? You can't pay $7.5 million a year for a guy that's what he's delivering. You can't.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. With universities and the trouble they are financially, it makes no sense. You're not getting the return on the investment. If you give him another contract, then you're going to have to pay an enormous buyout when you have to fire him down the road. There are no signs that this program's heading in the right direction. None. There's no momentum. There's no swag. There's nothing. Their situation is different than Penn State's to me, significantly different than Penn State's to me. And we'll get to them in a second. But there are parallels between them and Nebraska. And we'll get to them in right coming up next. But just to put a ribbon on Michigan, to me, they've got it. If it's Matt Campbell, whoever, you don't want to fire Jim Harbaugh. I mean, he's a Michigan legend, right? And yep. When he first got there, he did stabilize it. And yep. He got it to where they could recruit it. And then, okay, this is who we are. Can't get it to the level we are or really ever close. And he's obviously going backwards. But maybe now, and we saw the reports, I think it was last week, about him and the Houston Texans job, that there would be, that he would maybe have an interest getting back to the NFL. It's almost like it's being planned.
Right.
You know, he'll go back, if an NFL team will have him, he'll go back to the NFL and leave the Michigan, leave the Michigan program. But I think you have a hard time firing him. I think it'd be a weird look to fire.
You're not going to fire him.
So you need to have a parting of the ways.
Yeah, you're going to need
graceful parting of the ways.
Parting of the ways. You're going to, if anything, you're trying to call Houston and say, hey, yeah, take this guy. Mm-hmm. So we can, you know, mutually
beneficial.
And I
think he wants to be done too, don't you?
I sense it, yes. I think that, look, he's still a competitor. So there's that part of him that's going to drive him absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
When he gets to that point. But this is not where he thought they were going to be. This is not where I don't think any of us thought they'd be. I certainly did not have this. I had it way down. I thought that they were going to be right up there, 10-year war with Urban and him going back and forth. Nope. And that just has not been the case. They are not. This team is not recognizable to what I guess in my mind I envisioned for them when Jim got there. So. Who's next? I don't. If I'm them, I'm trying to go after somebody who is going to be able to recruit Ohio. Mm-hmm. The brand can recruit you nationally in certain areas, right? Like there are certain people who are going to want to put on the maize and blue and rock the Jumpman logo. And there's just a certain they grew up with maybe their dad or grandpa constantly being Wolverine fans from back in the 90s, and it's going to no matter what you'll get some of those kids. But what's the backbone of your team going to be? And can you come in and really try to swing? And at least be willing to fight Ohio State tooth and nail for some kids in Ohio and then not abandon it.
The two people who could do that are Matt Campbell and Luke Fickell.
Yeah.
Campbell would take the job in a second. I think he'd crawl bare-chested from Ames to do it.
Yep.
On his, you know, military crawl. Yep. I think Luke, I can't see Luke there. And I think
I can't
Luke's
either, but I, if I'm
right
Michigan,
now.
I'm offering Luke Fickell a lucrative deal to try to come up there. And just hear and just find out.
I mean, he knows what that program is, you know.
Yep.
I just, to me, that maybe it's the Pollyanna in me, but to me, it seems like Penn State or Notre Dame would be the more logical choice.
Oh, I totally agree. But I'm saying if I'm Michigan, I'm trying the best I can. That's my first target.
I agree. Yeah. He and Matt Campbell would be the guys you'd call and say, would you come? And I think Matt Campbell would take it in a second. And I think Jim Harbaugh quit recruiting Ohio when he lost Harrison. I think he said, I can't. I'm out. I think they thought they had him up until signing day. They thought they had him. And I think.
Buddy, there's people in our program that thought they had him.
Yeah. And I think he said, I'm out. I'm good. I'm not going to go in there and lose to them anymore. I lose to them on the field. I can't lose to them in recruiting. I'm out. I'm going to go recruit Massachusetts or wherever the hell he's doing in the North.
You can't lose if you don't play the game.
Yeah. Well, he's not.
That's what he's hoping for this week against Wisconsin.
Yeah. All right. Penn State losing to Maryland. Is to me, this is a weird year for Penn State in terms of who their opt-outs have been. And the one thing that I think has been exposed is Sean Clifford is a nice kid. He's an Ohio kid, St. X kid. But there's a limit to what he can do.
Yep.
There just is. I mean, he has not played well this year. Two more interceptions against Maryland. And he's not dynamic in any way. He's not Trace McSorley. He's not that type of player. So they don't have that element at quarterback. And it's exposed on a weekly basis. I was surprised they were bullied by Maryland, though. I was.
Me too, and you're absolutely right about Sean Clifford. So here's the problem. You name him captain last year. You name him captain this year. He's your leader. He's your intangibles guy. How do you replace that dude? So now you're in a situation where you're like, you know what, maybe we should go with Levis, but how's it going to go with the locker room if we bench our captain, two-time captain?
I think that's they're almost punting on the season. Yep. Like they'll just chalk it up to COVID, and we'll see in 2021.
Yeah, well, we'll see Penn State. I'm not sure we'll see James Franklin there in 2021, but –
He might
out to Texas if Urban says no.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, that could be the case. He may say, you know what, I've done all I can here. But them being 0-3 is particularly shocking to be 0-3. It's not nearly, though, for me. I still think that program has really good footing. I think that program's fine. It's a weird year. Nebraska's another thing entirely. And I thought Scott Frost needed this.
Oh, he absolutely needed
it. I thought Scott Frost needed this.
He had 2 weeks to prepare for Northwestern.
Yeah, and they
so
dominated.
Disappointed in the Huskers.
They had
so
over 400 yards of total offense. They moved it up and down the field. They played both quarterbacks, and they come away with 13 points. Their inability to capitalize in the red zone or to finish drives is stunning. We saw it against us, and it happened again against Northwestern over the weekend, and now they're 0-2. Northwestern's 3-0. And if you're Scott Frost and you're Nebraska, I don't know where do you go from here?
I don't know. Without winning that game, you basically, how do you tell your guys in the locker room, how do you tell your fan base, trust in my philosophy, in my system, in my coaching, trust we're going in the right direction, we're moving. Because that fan base does not care if Coach Fitzgerald is one of the best coaches as far as getting more out of his talent. They don't care. They said, damn it, we lost to Northwestern. In a non-COVID year, we would have more fans at Northwestern for the Cornhuskers than you would for Northwestern fans, and they're undefeated.
Correct.
Because they don't care about ball there. Like, their season ticket holders at Northwestern buy the tickets to then sell them to whoever's visiting. Like, this would have been a great year for them. Buy season tickets. Okay, why? Well, we can sell them for a high amount for Nebraska fans that are going to travel up. Nice weekend in Chicago. Go by the lake.
Sure.
See the beauty. Go to Evanston. It's gorgeous. It's lovely. Love going there. But their fans don't like going to the games. Because usually they're used to their team getting whooped. Well, I can't. Look, you know how I feel about Nebraska and my love for the program. But I'm so disappointed in them right now. I'm so disappointed in them.
It's tough. It's a really
tough spot.
It's tough
because I like Coach Fitzgerald too. But it's just like, no matter what Northwestern does, Nebraska's not going to be the brand in the West that people respect.
No. And I'm going to tell you something.
Northwestern is.
From our vantage point.
I don't know if I said Nebraska or Northwestern, but Northwestern won't be the brand. Nebraska needs to be the brand.
Absolutely. And from our vantage point, everything that happened here is the worst case scenario, right? Because now our Penn State win, not that we have to worry about it, we're going to win all of our games, but if you lose, now your Penn State win.
Oh, it's way gone.
So what?
Yeah.
So
no,
what?
No one cares.
You think you're going to get any juice from playing a Michigan team that's, what is Michigan going to be by the time we play them? 2-5?
Maybe.
If they get to that point, right? Who are you going to play coming out of the West? Northwestern? Purdue?
Northwestern or Purdue?
I mean,
one of those two.
You're not going to have any juice in any of those games. And it's bad for the league to have Michigan, Penn State, Nebraska. I mean, these programs have to carry. They have to help us.
Yeah.
Help us help you. You got to help us carry this league.
We've become the ACC in that respect, bro. It's Penn State
it's
has
Florida
become
State. Yep.
Florida State. We were like, what has happened? I don't even know another ACC school. Yeah. That's Miami. There you go.
Yeah.
It's Florida State, Miami, and when we're Clemson. At least they got Notre Dame thrown in for a season.
Right. Yeah, the gap is growing, and this was a potentially cataclysmic loss because Michigan wasn't even competitive. And Nebraska, those two programs, I think Penn State's in much better position, but I think those two programs, this is a bad look for them. It's a bad look for the league, and I don't know where they go. I don't know what – I mean, Scott's not going anywhere. They're not going to fire him. I don't know who they would get better, but – He needs to beat Northwestern. He needed to beat Northwestern.
Yeah.
And now you just you know, where do the wins start to come from? So tough, tough weekend in the Big Ten. A wild weekend in the National Football League. We take a look at some of the broad strokes. Nate Davis from USA Today will join us at the bottom of the hour. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Bishop and Laurinaitis is presented by Window Nation. Searching for a replacement window? Visit windownation.com today. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Neat or on the rocks, just act accordingly.
Starts with a glass of bourbon, then goes to, oh, First Blood's on. I think I'll watch this again.
You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
So no Browns, no Bengals on Sunday. Did you? What did you take in? Did you red zone it?
I red zoned it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, that's the best way, I think, to you kind of can see the whole league at that point. There were a couple of things that jumped out. The weekly reminder that everybody here is a pro with the Cowboys getting out to that big lead over the Steelers. Even though you say, geez, that should be – I mean, Pittsburgh got to hammer them. I think the number on that is like 10.5, and I think it was 14, and I took Pittsburgh to cover that. And it took every bit for them to hold on and win. I think the two games where the contenders played contenders that were interesting was the Bills dominating Seattle the way that they did. And then the Saints whipping the Bucks last night. I think those are the two that you go, okay, those are attention getters.
I think the Bills was a big attention getter. Well, they both were, but the Bills, they had been stumbling. So it's like, oh, well, look what they found. A little resurgence, gotta be a big confidence booster, and look, took advantage of the 1 p.m. kickoff against Seattle.
You mentioned that last week, the 1 p.m.er, the 1 p.m. kickoff. I remember you saying that specifically.
Well, I mentioned it because I have taken advantage of that numerous times.
the Seahawks have gone west already a lot.
Yeah.
And the Rams have had to do this. They've gone, or east rather, they've gone east a lot. And Josh Allen was spectacular, and Pete Carroll said it postgame, look, we thought they'd come out running. I think they threw it on 20 of their first 22 plays.
Yeah.
Buffalo did. And so that was one where they get that big return out of the gates and then score right away, and Seattle was having to play catch-up the whole game. And Russ makes up for a lot of their deficiencies in terms of their offensive line and certainly their defense, their inability to get a pass rush is pretty scary, I would think. Basically, they have to manufacture it with Jamal Adams is about all they can do. But he can only do so much. And when he doesn't play perfect, you can't win 48-44 every week.
Yeah.
You know, at some point, you got to play a little bit of defense and get a stop, and they didn't play any.
No doubt. Russell has to play perfect for them to win football game, right? I mean, if he turns the ball over, that's when they've lost. It's when he doesn't play normal Russell ball. So they don't play complimentary football to where, oh, Russell isn't perfect today. He's turned it over twice. But he's also scored twice. Okay, we need to come up with a big pick or a big sack fumble. They haven't played that way in the games that they've needed them to. I'll tell you what, Matt Rhule in Carolina.
He's a coach, man.
Yes, he is. I did not have that.
No,
I did not have that. I kept wondering, what in the world are they doing hiring this guy?
Yep.
Well, not. He can do it.
It's a nice team, too, with Anderson on the outside. They're using Curtis Samuel, McCaffrey back this week, Bridgewater. They played hard. They play to the whistle. They do it week in and week out. They cover, it seems like, most weeks, and they did again here. All the while, as we're talking about all of this, Patrick Mahomes, I think, is 25-1, touchdown to interception on the season, pretty sure.
So is that good?
We're talking all about Russ and all this stuff, and you forget how great Mahomes has been this year. They can just do everything.
How about the Miami Dolphins?
How about Tua? How about that game? And that's when I brought that up with Fields. When you think about Tua's ability to extend, Kyler Murray versus Tua was fun. This is a lot of fun. Justin Herbert was awesome. They lose again, heartbreaking fashion. But these young quarterbacks, even the guys who are not as sought after, like the kid in Jacksonville, Garrett Gilbert, these guys can just come in and play. I just, in my time being around, you know, paying attention to the NFL, I just can't recall a time where you can just come in and play and have success right away the way that you can now at the quarterback position. And I don't know if it's the NFL is just playing more college schemes or what it is. But these guys can come in and be good right away. It's pretty wild to see.
I don't know what it is either, but it's one of those where you're like, The any given Sunday kind of, I guess, cliche is so true in the National Football League because people know how to scheme. People know how to – there's just a certain effect to it. Like the Dallas Cowboys-Steelers game was like, what?
Right.
What is going on? And really, as an AFC North fan, you know, as someone that follows it, you're like, come on, Dallas. Spring one on. You know what I mean? Help people out. But it's championship teams in those situations know how to win, right? It's championship culture. They found out a way. Pittsburgh did not play great, but they found a way. They found a way at the end of the day to get it done.
Yep, and so they go to 8-0. We're halfway through the NFL season. We've only had the two postponements. It was the Tennessee games. That were. Other than that, we've played everything. You had Matt Stafford on COVID list and looked it. Frankly, he was out all last week of practice, really struggled. Eventually went out with a concussion. Baker Mayfield of the Browns now on the COVID list. He can, if he, it's not him personally who's tested positive, but at the contact tracing. So he's out until at least Wednesday. So he has to have negative tests to get to Wednesday. The Browns practicing today, off tomorrow, and then again on Wednesday. So they would need him to get through that. I think that the momentum was that the Bucs were going to be the best team in the NFC at the end of the day. That they are hosting the Saints, that they would play well, that revenge would be, a dish best served cold.
Antonio Brown,
and what you got was dominated. Just dominated. And the Bucs just, what were their rush stats in this game? Like they ran it 8 times?
It was terrible. Yeah, it was terrible. I know that. I heard the boys in the Morning Juice talking about the rush stats. I forget who had Rojo on their fantasy team, but basically saying that he got nothing out of them. As Schlegel beats, I think Schlegel beat Bobby. So you can imagine Bobby's getting after his little digital fantasy football team right now. He is laying into
not
them.
Having it. Five carries, 8 yards.
Yeah, 5 carries, 8 yards.
Five for 8. Meantime, New Orleans was 37 for 138. Brady threw it 38 times, 3 picks. Breeze 26 of 32, 222. He just death by 1,000 cuts. He's obviously not who he once was, but he's still so smart.
Yep.
And he can still just throw it to the open guy. They catch it, and we matriculate it down. It's basically like a run game.
Yep.
They use the pass game as a run game, really, because they don't.
And how big of a difference Michael Thomas coming back? You can just see it, what it does.
For sure. For sure, yeah. I mean, they just – and if you're Tampa Bay, I mean, they've looked bad several times.
Yeah.
Not even
their defense looked like they – I mean, they couldn't do anything.
No.
So that was surprising to me because I expected that to be – like I was actually excited to kind of try to stay up for that one. And then after the first quarter, I'm like, all right, this is going to be over. Let's turn the sleep timer on. Let's turn off the lamp. Let's get nice and cozy in bed.
Yeah, it was done at that point. So you didn't have that. You didn't have the type of Sunday nighter that you thought you were going to have. And it was, if you're the Bucs, you know, is it coaching? Is it lack of discipline? What is it that leads them to get whipped the way that they did? Because it's hard to wrap your head around.
Talented. Honestly, I think it was just the way the flow of the game went. It was the three and outs, and then the Saints not being able to stop them. It put you in a play calling mode for Bruce Arians and then that we can't be patient. Like once you go three and out, Saints score, you're like, okay, we can't stick with the ground game.
Yeah.
We can't afford to get in third and long. So if we're running the football, we're not getting anything early and we're not able to get into third and shorts and stuff like that. We gotta start just going drop back pass. And it was there are some games that just happen like that. And it stinks that it's against your division opponent. And it usually doesn't happen that way because you know the opponent so well, but maybe there's also a lull of, oh, Mike Thomas is back. So what's the new wrinkles that we have here? It's Emmanuel Sanders, back. There's a lot of things that players that came back into it scheme wise that could help New Orleans. Quite frankly, throughout the last 4 weeks of tape that you're usually watching, because stuff that they're able to run with Mike Thomas in the relationship and stuff that you can't prepare for wasn't even in the breakdown anyway. It wasn't since week one when they played them. And then both teams have changed since then. So everything about it, rain, outside, Tampa, Florida, Drew's not going to be good with rain, ball slippery, windy, didn't matter.
Didn't matter. No, didn't matter. And you're left asking the question, who's the best team in the NFC? And I don't know. I don't know who is at this point. Well, that's Nate Davis, NFL writer for USA Today. He joins us coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
What's the point of watching football all weekend if you can't overanalyze everything to death?
That's why we bring you Reaction Monday.
Sponsored by Taco Bell.
The Fan.
Their favorite sport is berating their producer.
You just sat there for 10 minutes.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
And time to head out to the Bryant Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Our good buddy Nate Davis, NFL writer for USA Today, joining us there. Nate, thanks so much for the time. Let's just dive in with a pretty straightforward question, and I don't know what the answer is. I'm curious what you think it is. Who's the best team in the NFC?
Man, well, I mean, after last night, I guess you have to say it's probably New Orleans, but I mean, I think they're all pretty close, but you know, that was certainly an unexpected and impressive outcome after the Saints have played a bunch of nip and tuck games. You know, Michael Thomas didn't make that big an impact for him, but just crazy to see them dominate the Bucs so thoroughly on both sides of the ball.
Nate, around the NFL over the weekend, there were some interesting outcomes, Bills over Seahawks. I know Seattle personally does not play that great in the 1 o'clock window when they're traveling east. But as you jump around and you see scores like the Chiefs beating the Panthers, but the Panthers putting up a fight, what stood out to you? What did you take away from this weekend of NFL contests?
Well, you know, I guess, James, you know, you guys asked me who the best team in the NFC is. I mean, I think we're just kind of in a who knows kind of season. I mean, there is no real super team, I don't think, unless maybe, you know, Kansas City emerges as that. I don't think it's going to be Pittsburgh, though, you know, they've got a reasonable path to 16-0 right now. I don't think they'll do that. But you said, you know, the Chiefs or the Panthers put together a really nice game plan of keep away and almost take out the Chiefs on the road. You know, I think everyone had the Steelers, you know, covering, you know, their huge number and having a roll over the Cowboys with their fourth quarterback, and that doesn't happen. And then you see the result last night where, you know, it looks like the Bucs were starting to establish themselves as the top team in the NFC, and you know, you see that happen. So I think it's just going to be one of those things like we're going to have to stay glued to this, and that's really what the NFL wants. And obviously we all know the NFL is set up to make everybody 8-8 every year. Just with the whole parity aspects of it, and you're certainly seeing it, you know, here in 2020.
Nate, it's something to watch these young quarterbacks play. Herbert really was incredible. I know they lost, but I mean, you put two balls right on the money, and the receiver just couldn't come down to them. And he's been doing that for a while. Joe Burrow here in our state has been great for the first half of his season. We saw Kyler versus Tua last night, or yesterday afternoon, rather. That was awesome. Tua coming right in, second start, and he went toe-to-toe with one of the most exciting players in the league. And Kyler, Josh Allen, a young guy who's thriving. What do you make of this young group of quarterbacks and how quickly they're having so much success?
Yeah, well, the quarterback position, you know, in the NFL is in good hands, and I'm sure, you know, we'll even be more so once we get Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence into the mix, presumably next spring. But you're right. The thing that's surprising is just how well these guys hit the ground running anymore, it seems. And certainly this year, without the benefit of an offseason or mini camp or training camps, to see how well Joe Burrow has done. And, you know, you have to give the coaches some credit. I know the Bengals had a lot of a lead up time with him, and we're kind of able to install a lot of things that, you know, he liked ahead of time, and had so many meetings with him before he was even drafted. But to me, yeah, you mentioned him. I mean, the offensive rookie of the year front runner right now has got to be Justin Herbert, and just given how well he has played week after week after week, and not having the same benefit that Joe Burrow did in the offseason, in that he knew where he was going, or that he was even designated as a starter at the beginning of the year. But he has just played so fantastically every week. You know, obviously the Chargers haven't gotten the results in the win column. I think they've lost their six games by a total of 24 points. But, you know, don't pin that on any failings of Justin Herbert, losing these games to the Tom Brady's and the Pat Mahomes, you know, et cetera. And I think if you're a Chargers fan, you know, as bad a luck as the Chargers usually seem to have in all aspects of their team, it sure looks like you at least got a good quarterback for the next, you know, 10 to a dozen years.
Nate, I really don't want to watch this football game tonight between the Patriots and the Jets, but I love football, so I will watch it. And I remember where we were in March and April, right, where there was no sports on. So I'm going to watch the football game. So I'm trying to ask, what is your opinion of Cam Newton, and is he close to two things? being replaced by Stidham, no matter what we've seen of Stidham, is he being close to being replaced because it's been a struggle for Cam? And do you think this is the last year that we see Cam Newton starting? I mean, that's with the exception of some miraculous turnaround of his play.
Well, I mean, I guess those are kind of interlinked questions. But, you know, I think Cam is a guy we mentioned, you know, offseason, a lot of other stuff. I mean, he got signed at the 11th hour before teams reported for training camp. And, you know, he's going to a team that, you know, what did we talk about all last year with the Patriots is they don't have any weapons. That didn't change this offseason. You know, Cam obviously was a factor early in the season where he was the weapon, and he made those other guys around him a little better because you had to have a guy up in the box keeping an eye on Cam, which you didn't have to have for Tom Brady previously. But, I mean, for him to go to a new team, entirely new culture, you know, to a coaching staff, and we all know how great Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels, et cetera, are, and the continuity they've established up there. They don't have continuity of offense this year. I mean, they're trying to win with a totally different way of playing offensive football. So I don't know how much of this you pin on Cam Newton, but you know it's going to be interesting to see how the Patriots move forward. I mean, you would think that if they lose tonight, you know, by some miracle to the winless Jets, that they're going to have to start evaluating Jared Stidham and figure out, hey, do we bring Cam back beyond this year? Are we looking to get up for Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence if possible in the draft, or are we looking at veteran options out there in the league? And you know, it continues to be one of the great stories of this year. It's just kind of, you know, the question we were all asking was, did Tom Brady make Bill Belichick, or did Bill Belichick make Tom Brady? It's been fascinating hearing Belichick kind of talking about salary cap issues and other things right now, because it certainly looks like right now that Tom Brady was the key ingredient to that whole thing.
It certainly looks like he covered up a lot of holes that they had there. Nate, yep. I'll get you out of here on this one. We're halfway through this season. We reached the halfway point officially about midway through the games on Sunday. The NFL has had very little in terms of COVID disruption. We've had players test positive, but by and large, we're playing these games, aside from Tennessee, where they had to maneuver a little bit. We've seen games on Mondays and Tuesdays. From my vantage point, this has been pretty impressive the way the NFL has gone to this point at the halfway mark. What grade do you give the league on the way they've handled this, and do you foresee any more trouble going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of said all along, I kind of have to give the league, B+, A-, kind of a grade for all this. I mean, they haven't had the benefit of a bubble, and to me, the big hurdle throughout all this was that you've got so many guys who are 22, 23 years old, many of them single, many of them coming into money for the first time, and many of them coming into, you know, scads for free time outside of the discipline of a college program, you know, for the first time or early in their careers. And for the most part, you know, they showed pretty miraculous discipline. So I think the players, coaches, and the people around these teams deserve a heck of a lot of credit for like you said, for the most part, avoiding too many COVID potholes and remaining disciplined throughout this process. And you know, it does seem we are having more and more of a rise of certain instances. And I think there was one point last week where there were four teams that were all, you know, conducting practice virtually. And, you know, we've seen Baker and the Bengals have their issues. But I think overall, you know, and the other thing is you have to give the NFL credit for continuing to keep the hammer down on these guys and make sure they're staying in line. But overall, I think pretty impressive effort on all sides here.
Yeah, I agree with you. Certainly do. He is Nate Davis. He's the NFL writer for USA Today. We thank him so much for your time. Thanks, Nate. Always enjoy talking to you.
Enjoy that pass game, James.
Yeah. He's going to be thrilled. Yeah, I will.
Well, G-Dub. You got G-Dub, so that's good.
Yeah, G-Dub. He might just say, you know what? I'm just going to blitz every single snap, zero. Let's go.
That line now is -10. By the way, -10.
I mean, Joe Flacco, Cam Newton, Patriots, Jets. Who'd have thought?
I think I'll pass. I'll watch a little with Black Cobra before he goes to bed.
I'm going to watch a little bit. I'll probably fall asleep in the first half. But yeah. I remember March. I remember April. I fear what's coming.
No, you saw the news. Great news today, in all seriousness. Great news today from Pfizer. 90% effectiveness on the vaccine.
Yeah, 2/3 of our country won't take it.
Well, I will. I'll be first in line. Inject me with that sucker. Let's go. As soon as you can give it to me, I'm for it. We hit a little thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Can you feel yourself becoming more unproductive? It's because Football Friday is coming.
Presented by Byers Auto Group.
The Fan. If you say something with confidence, then you can't be wrong.
I don't even know.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
So many games this weekend. Michigan ran it 18 times for 13 yards.
Yeah.
Clemson ran it 33 for 34 yards. Penn State was 36 for 94, 2.6 a carry against Maryland, and the Bucks ran it 8 times. You got to have a threat. You got to have a threat. Now, some of this is you're chasing. I get it. You're chasing, and you give up on the run. Some of this is just complete ineffective.
I mean, got to stay balanced.
33 times 34
balance
yards.
Doesn't mean, you know, balance is the threat, a runner pass on any snap. That's the toughest to defend. It's not looking up and seeing 250, 250, although that was the goal of Urban Meyer teams, was trying to get 250 on the ground, 250 through the air.
Right.
I think the goal of Kevin Wilson and Ryan Day is more 200 on the ground, 300 in the air.
Yes. I think you're right. You get to 500 both ways. Time for thing or not a thing. Chops is here. Go, Chops.
Bishop and Laurinaitis. Thing or not a thing.
All right, here we go on a reaction Monday. Tuff Borland was named the defensive player and special teams player of the game in the Buckeyes' win over Rutgers. Thing or not a thing?
Yeah, real solid player. You know, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, he had a nice game. He had a really nice game. You probably watched this closer than I did.
Well, I mean, nobody really. I mean, Tuff played solid. He had a really nice block on the springing block, if you will, on the fake punt. Mm-hmm. He was the only sack in the game for the Buckeyes. So if you want to say, hey, what's a concern for you? We got one sack against Rutgers. It was a game where a lot of people played, and there wasn't one that one person was going to just absolutely wow and stand out. So give it to your leader. Give it to your captain who played solid.
This from NFL Research Twitter. Last night was the 333rd start of Tom Brady's career. That includes playoffs. It was the first one in which his team has trailed by 30-plus points at halftime. Thing or not a thing?
I think it's a big thing for a lot of reasons, but it just goes to show you how the marriage of he and Belichick, like they were in games always. Mostly one, but were games. And that this is a little bit of amateur hour in Tampa. It is, a little bit. There's a lot of lack of discipline. There was no threat of the run. They bailed on it quickly, as you pointed out earlier. From a play-calling standpoint, a lot of what they didn't make a whole lot of sense. That was as strange a game as you'll see. Them getting beat 38-3 and down, what were they down? 31-0, 31-3 at half? 31-0
I have to say, I've played with some really poorly assembled football teams in the National Football League. I'm having a hard time recollecting if we were ever down 30 at halftime. So there's something I did better than Tom!
There you go.
Yes! Yes! It looked to me that Arians thought that they could win through the air against the Saints secondary. And that was how they were going to attack. And when you went three and out, I mean, they tried to go after Gronk a couple times early, and Malcolm had great coverage. I think they thought that was a matchup they were going to win.
And just go, because he's gotten better as this season's gone along. And at one point, they put up the stat of the amount of defensive plays he's played.
Oh, yeah.
He's playing every play.
Yeah.
He's done it like the last 3 years. He's played every play.
He's a dude. He's one of the most competitive people I've ever been around.
Yeah. It's amazing to still have that fire burn after all he's accomplished.
Warren Sharp pointing this out. The 2020 Bills became just the 13th team in NFL history to record 20-plus first downs in every single one of their first 9 games. The last two teams to achieve that made the Super Bowl, the 2018 Rams and the 2017 Patriots. Thing or not a thing?
Well, that seems like a thing. And I'm dangerously close to putting them into – they're really close to getting into Baltimore territory from the standpoint of – if they are a tough team to chase. They play really good defense. They've got playmakers on defense. And – if they can get ahead in a game, it's hard to chase them down. It is.
It is. They're tough to read because they had that middle, like, what, last 2-3 weeks that you're like, ugh, what are we watching?
The Jets game.
But, yeah. Man, yeah.
Weird.
Really good.
from ESPN Stats and Info. James, you can help me on this because people say
Muhammad
his name different.
Ibrahim.
People say his name different every time they say it.
Yep.
Muhammad Ibrahim.
Ibrahim.
Has joined Javon Ringer, 2008 for MSU, as the only Big Ten players with 9 rush TDs through 3 team games over the last 20 seasons. Ibrahim is the first Big Ten player with 140 rush yards and 2 rush TDs in 3 straight games since Ezekiel Elliott in 2014 for Ohio State. Thing or not a thing?
It's a thing for a lot of reasons. Number one, we remembered him from a year ago, but I thought that this would be Bateman, that he would be the one statistically exploding. It's Ibrahim who's doing it. He's been impressive, and they got a win over Illinois, so that's good for them.
Yeah, I'm with you. Muhammad Ibrahim runs hard. It's still like PJ and his whole system with the RPO. He still loves to run the football. Like that's what he wants to do first. And you're right with Bateman. You thought he'd be the guy, and he still is. I mean, really good. I think he had a touchdown reception in the game, maybe a couple. But Muhammad Ibrahim runs extremely hard, and I think he's a guy that you will see on Sundays. Now he might be one of those late round draft picks, right? Because I'm not sure how fast he is. You know, he's not going to wow you at the combine, but he's just one of those dudes that you feel like is you're going to, you know, third, fourth round pick, and next thing you know, you look up and he has a couple 100-yard games in the NFL, right? Like, it just runs hard.
Last one today, Kyle Trask is the first player in SEC history with 4 passing touchdowns in 5 consecutive games. Thing or not a thing?
It's a thing. It's them housing Georgia is a bigger thing, though. We didn't talk about that one much, but that's a monster result for Florida.
Yes,
that's
it is.
That's a big-time result for them. And that's,
yes, it is.
Now, Dan, first of all, that puts them into the national championship picture. They are clearly going to win the East. It now puts them a win over Bama. It looks like they maybe have the quarterback to give Bama some struggles. They certainly have the tight end. And now that's recruiting, because Florida and Georgia are recruiting the same players, guys.
Yep. Yep. You're absolutely right. And so that's a huge deal for them.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. All right. Coming up next, we hit you with the Buckeye Blitz. What did we learn this weekend? Who gets our game balls? Who earned a courtesy car? All of that and so much more. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit LindsayHonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus. The Fan.
Good morning, I'm Matt Andrews. Big Ohio State men's basketball news yesterday. Multiple outlets reporting Michi Johnson, a high school senior from Cleveland and Garfield Heights, is reclassifying to this 2020 class, graduating from high school early, and he plans to enroll at Ohio State in December. Columbus Crew, a 2-1 win yesterday at home over Atlanta. That win will net them a third seed in the MLS playoffs, a date in the postseason with 6th seed New York Red Bulls. Game date and time to be announced. NASCAR yesterday, 24-year-old Chase Elliott won the NASCAR Cup title with a win at the Phoenix Raceway. In golf, Carlos Ortiz won the Houston Open by 2 shots. It's now Masters Week at Augusta, the final major of the year. Monday Night Football tonight, Patriots visit the Jets. Kickoff just past 8 here on The Fan. This update's brought to you by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers. Visit buyatoyota.com. Toyota, let's go places. Breaking sports news on The Fan.
The finest distillation of sports talk in all of Ohio. This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
That was big news in the update there. Michi Johnson reclassifying and in this season, at Ohio State on the hoops front. He blew out his ACL, I want to say, in his sophomore or junior year. But as a freshman, was a sensation up in Cleveland. And when Dwayne Wade was with the Cavs, which it's hard to remember that he was, but Dwayne Wade was with the Cavs, he and LeBron would go watch him play in high school. I mean, that's, can you imagine? Like, that's what a revelation he was a big get. And he's got a chance to be like a real program point guard here, where they recruit around him for a couple of years, and still the uncertainty
This
season,
let's
obviously
hope so.
There.
I thought DJ would be one too.
Yeah, I know it. It's a good point out of you. But hopefully that you can stick around and build something there. And, Coach Holtman trying to figure out, you know, when are we going to play? What's it going to look like? Pulled out of South Dakota. So much uncertainty.
Hey, I looked up DJ.
With basketball.
DJ's last name's pronunciation guide. So if you need a little help with saying his name, it still has the
Uwe Ungulale.
Yep. So O-O-H.
Did I get it right?
O-O-H-E-E-Dash capital A H N U E on dash G G U H dash L U H L dash L A Y. U E on G L L A. U E on G L L A.
Oh, I'm adding. There's another L that I was missing. I went Lele.
No, it's Lele. Lele. L U H L A Y. U E
on G.
Yep.
La.
So if you want to be cool with your friends, you know, over the Zoom, happy hour, since nobody goes to the bar and talks sports anymore. If you want to be cool with your friends, it's OOH-EE-AHN-GUH-LUH-LAY. Which, by the way, I did refer to.
LUH.
Yep. Lole. I did help,
wow,
you know, clear up stuff with Jerry Emig, by the way. I said, look, for Tommy Togi, what you have to do is don't say hard G. Just change it to G-H-E-E, like the butter. And he loved it. I don't know if he'll change it, but he loved it. He's like, oh, look at you. You must cook. I'm like, you're damn right I do. I was like, but
he's a fellow Minnesotan like you, yeah. So I'm guessing he'll take care of you.
I doubt it. He's not changing front. All that. He's got too much stuff to change, like Justin Fields' unbelievable stats, right? And like, he ain't changing all that. Now I got to go to Maryland's website.
Boy, it's hard to even if it's spelled out, to say it fast is hard.
Uyangolele.
Wow.
Uyangolele.
Yeah, like that.
It's tough. That's a tough one, though.
I got to find the Maryland
terrible. But Tua was that way, too.
He was.
And then you got used to saying
it.
That's how it was with Jan.
It's almost easier when you hear him say it. Like, I appreciate it. Like, the University of Minnesota, they do they have a defensive end, Winston De Lada Badir. You should see how to spell that thing. But he would say it. They have their own guys say their last names. So you can read it and then also hear it, and you can hear how they say it and to make sure you're
– Yeah.
Yeah.
Tua was that way, and then it became something you would just say it fast, and Giannis was that way, Antetokounmpo. Like, you looked at that, it was like, wow, that's a lot going on. But then you started to hear it, and then it became – and I think that'll be the same. This DJ kid's a stud. The kid at Clemson's a stud. So, yeah.
I'm just trying to find – now. Now I'm searching the game notes for Maryland so I can get –
Tulia.
Make sure that's how it's said. Listen, you can't just watch games because our guy Gus said Muhammad Ibrahim one time. Like, Gus, that's not it.
Right.
Love you, but that ain't it.
So anyway,
you start second-guessing yourself.
Yeah. Well, I do that constantly. All right, let's hit the blitz on a Monday. We start with, we do this well, and there's a pretty common theme here week in, week out.
Yeah, you know, the lazy one for me would have been just like, oh, we throw the football. I'm going to go a step further. The deep passing game. All right, going into the game, Justin Fields had only had one incompletion on throws over 15, throws over 20, throws over 30 yards. I mean, he was third, I think, in the first 2 weeks that they had played, and I'm interested to see kind of where these stats fall after this last weekend. But he was third in the country in, like, completions with how far the ball has traveled in the air. So not just like passing yards, but passing yards through the air. Like, so it's the deep passing game. We've always been okay at the short intermediate stuff, right? Even JT was good on the short crossers and the spot routes and all that stuff. But what's blown everything open for us with Justin and Dwayne and all these guys is the fact that it's the down the field. His accuracy down the field has been extremely impressive, and that's what we do well. We set it up. I called it in the game. When you get to the plus territory and it's in 12 personnel, if tight ends are on the same side, he's going to max protect and he's going to take shots. Boom, here it comes. And Justin's hitting on those.
Yep, it's interesting. I literally wrote, we spin it deep. It's like how I play college football 14 against the boys. Like, I'm not throwing crossers. Like, we're going to hit those deep balls. We're going to hit them. And you can hit them, and we hit them better than anybody in the country right now. We won't beat Bama if we continue to do this.
I think if we keep tackling poor, if we keep having a – if we can't get to the quarterback with four, I get nervous. So why do I say that? I chose this over protection. I think protection has become an issue at times, too. And some of that's not just the line. Some of that's Justin holding it too long. But you don't want to see your quarterback getting smoked against Rutgers. He got hit a couple times. But one sack against Rutgers?
Yeah.
And look, they were held the ball a couple times. But if we can't get there with four, Is our secondary deep enough, Bo, to where if we blitz and don't get home, are you confident we'll hold up against the Bamas, against the Clemsons, against the Notre Dames? You know, I mean, I that's what I want to see. Can we improve the pass rush game, all that stuff as this goes forward, and hopefully we can against Maryland.
Yeah, that dovetails into mine. We're giving up way too many chunk plays. We give up a lot of big plays. We're three games into this. We've given up a lot, more than I'd like to see, and more than you could to survive against Bama, for sure, because Mac Jones will throw it down the field. Even without Waddle, they still have enough talent to be able to make you pay. So, and obviously, DJ and Trevor, whoever's quarterback in Clemson, they're not afraid to throw it down the field either. So the chunk plays, and that goes to tackling and everything you said. So all of that stuff adds up. I'd like to see more of this. What would you like to see more of?
Oh, man, I'd like to see more takeaways defensively.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we need to get the ball. Like, because that's one of those things, too. It has to be a cultural thing of, hey, we're punching the ball out, or we're doing it. And I think, you know, last year we took Chase Young for granted. Like, every single game of sack fumbles, like Myles Garrett earlier this season, right?
Yeah.
I need to see more takeaways, because in those games where things aren't going perfect, that's where it can flip on you. And that's what Ryan was saying on the Zoom with us this week. He's talking about Master Teague, and he's going to eat up clock, and he's going to be able to get ahead of the chains. He's like, you put serious stress on a team, say you're playing, you know, Penn State, say you're playing Clemson, say you're playing some of these teams that you think talent equates, and you're able to wear on the clock, you're able to get 6 yards on a first down, and it's a physical run, and then you're able to get a takeaway. Now you just took away a possession from them, and you're able to punch those. Like, that puts so much pressure on the opposing offense, yeah. But we need to start taking the ball away.
I'd like to see some more from the backup receivers. I mean, I know what the two studs can do. I know what Garrett can do. I know what Chris Olave can do. I'd like to see a little bit more from somebody. I mean, Jameis Williams had the one. It's a touchdown. But we didn't see much, hardly nothing of Fleming, nothing in Jigba this week. Like,
well,
with
Fleming
COVID
dropped the one,
everything.
I know that probably got Hartline fired up.
Got
puts him in
fired
early,
up.
Drops the yep. deep dig route, and you didn't see him again till the end. And then, as we highlighted, Ryan Day flips out on the sideline because he puts in G. Scott and Julian Fleming. And one of them, somebody isn't lined up right to where they have to take a timeout. Yep. And that's where the coach goes, you know what? I'm trying to play you.
You're done.
Get out.
Yeah. So they got to be
back. I don't know whose fault it was, but you're right. I want to see the talent because it's there.
Yeah, and you're just in a COVID year with injury, we're so Olave Wilson heavy right now, which they're great, but I just, you know, I want to see some of those other guys start to make a little bit of a mark. Coach, who earned his courtesy car this week?
Oh, man, I put Ryan Day. And the reason is that you go into this game with a fake punt. I certainly didn't think you'd have a fake punt for Rutgers. No. The guy thinks of everything. And to call it, the sense that, hey, we have a chance here. We know Greg's going to be aggressive. We have a chance here to really steal a possession and really open this thing up. Instead of punting up 14-3 or whatever, we can really – yeah. Coach took it seriously.
Yeah, he did. I'm going to give it – this is unprecedented territory in the 3 weeks we've done this. I'm going to give it to the opposing coach. I'm going to give it to Shiano. I was so impressed to see somebody who knows he doesn't have the answers but throw everything
yeah.
at you. Yep. Like, he threw everything. Like, they kept chopping the wood, which is what he's trying to build that program. And to not kick field goals, to try onside kicks in the third quarter, to do everything you can to win the game. That's the objective. What difference does it make if you could beat 63-7 or 49-7? It doesn't make any 49-10. It doesn't make any difference. So, but his team kept fighting, and he threw everything at Ohio State. And I think that's the way that you can build a competent program. I do. By the way, he wouldn't be the worst coach at Michigan. you know,
gosh, you're right. I mean, you did just throw that at me. I wonder if he would take it. I mean, yes, he would take it. Of course, he would take
after
it
after 1 year. Yeah, it'd be tough.
Well, it depends. If he upsets Michigan, then you got your hey. I'll send you just give me the address of the football building. I'll start packing up my stuff.
Right. Just walk. Offensive game ball.
What's more likely to you, real quick? It's Justin Fields. It's obvious. 6 touchdowns to count for.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Right.
He still has more touchdowns to count for than incompletions. But who would you – what's more likely to happen? If I got to get you to bet your vast estate on Urban going to Texas or Shiano to Michigan?
Urban to Texas. Seems more likely than Shiano to Michigan. I think Shiano's pull would be more – I could see Penn State for him.
Oh, of course.
Would be a
what about
a
James Franklin
pull?
To Texas – Shiano to Penn State. Anyway, go on. Who's your
Yeah, there's a lot. I just think, like, the job he's done early for them. I think he's been, I think they've been inspired. I think I just respect a coach who, like, how many times have we seen coaches down Big Desk kick field goals?
Oh,
or
of
after
course.
Scoring a touchdown
Scott,
to cut it to 28.
Scott was still in the game
deep.
And kicked a field goal.
Kicked a field goal, right. Like, yeah. No, go try. That's not, you can't beat Ohio State that way. So I just was impressed that he did it. We handed out the game ball. Defensive game ball.
I mean.
I went none here. I didn't.
I guess I would go tough Borland just because the team did. But I looked at the box score. I looked at the game. Nobody really stood out.
Nobody stood out.
It was a, I mean.
Solid. Just,
there wasn't that one, you know, guy that you're like, yeah, that dude's playing well. So, like, you know, by process of elimination, tough Borland.
We haven't had at the early start to this season, we have not had, and this is something we've been used to for a long time under Urban, a defensive player that you can't take your eyes off of. I mean, this goes back to, I mean, you guys have been doing this for 20 years. There's always been. In your era, all the way through and into Ryan Shazier, into the Boses and Chase and the corners and Malik Hooker and all of the, this defense right now, I'm looking at him going, all right, who's the superstar here?
Yeah.
Who's going to be, who's a day one league guy? Is it still Sean Wade? Who's that guy? I don't know who that is right now with this
defense. I feel bad for Sean because now it's starting to look like he's struggling at the high point, and I know he can do it, but the two unbelievable catches by Dotson, which Dotson had another nice catch against Maryland, but then Giovanni Haskins in the back of the end zone, that went up over Sean Wade. Looked like it was going to be a pick, and their starting tight end for Rutgers goes up and high points it better than you for a touchdown late in the game. Now you're saying, gosh, just you could just tell, too, with Sean's body language after, like, you got to be kidding me.
Right.
You know? So I feel bad because he's in great position. It's not like he's – it's just for whatever reason, the jump balls aren't going his way so far in 2020.
No. Justin Fields' Heisman grade.
Oh, A+.
It's an A+.
You threw three football games, buddy, and my goodness, you have more touchdowns accounted for than incompletions. Yeah, it's an A+.
What's he, an 86% passer?
Yeah.
Like, come on. What do you – I mean – win it all grade.
I got it as an A. I got it as an A. Here's why. The quarterback. There's still things that concern me, but it's quarterback.
And that's the only reason I go A-, just because of what I kind of alluded to defensively. Who's the game wrecker? Right now at all three levels defensively, I just don't see a super-duper star anywhere. A lot of really good players, but I need someone to elevate into that level before I go A on that. But I think this team could beat anybody in the country, to your point, because of the quarterback. All right, we play a little higher or lower up next. Austin Ward at the bottom of the hour. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Bishop and Laurinaitis is presented by Window Nation. Searching for a replacement window? Visit windownation.com today. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Day drinking responsibly with a touch of class. This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan. Let me talk to you about my friends over at Affinity Whole Health. Guys, if you're over 30, it's time to know your number. Go get your blood work done. See where you're at. See if you're low. See if they can help you out. They can. I know they can help you out, especially if you're low. They can help you get right back into the zone, into the danger zone. Feeling juiced, getting more out of your workouts, just more out of your life. Feeling better, feeling like you were back in your 20s. Go to feelgreatcolumbus.com and find out how.
There you go. All right, time for a little higher or lower. Go, Chopper.
It's time for higher or lower on Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, we have a new number one, but we all know that. Let's look a little deeper. Cincinnati is number 7 at 6-0. Higher or lower?
Oh, boy. For me, this just comes down to them and BYU, who I would have. I don't know that I could jump them over Florida. I don't know if I could jump them, although, I think both them against Florida and Texas A&M would be a good game at this point. Honestly, like, I would probably just move Florida up to 5. I know A&M beat Florida, though. That's tricky. I'm going to say they're where they need to be. But BYU is right there with them.
Yeah, I think they're right where they need to be as well.
That's a hard one.
It is. It is. BYU might be asking for a recount of the vote. But they are really close. They are really close. I think Cincinnati is right where they need to be.
Indiana jumps into the top 10 at number 10, just barely getting in there. Higher or lower?
Higher. They're better than Miami.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're better than Miami too. I think their wins are more impressive than Miami's wins. I would have them higher. This is hard. We talked about this, how these, so many of these power conference teams have multiple losses. So that's how you have Louisiana ranked, you have Coastal Carolina ranked, Marshall ranked, because nobody knows what to do.
I mean, you know what's going to be the worst part for Indiana, Bo?
What's up?
Is that they're going to be, you know, 10 or whatever, and then they're going to play us, and we're going to act accordingly. And we're going to beat them probably by 24. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to look up, and Indiana will be dropped to the 20s. And you'll be saying to yourself, what? That's not fair, because Miami got spanked by the only team they play, and right, they almost got upset last week, but because they're the U.
Yes.
Versus
this is,
the Hoosiers.
This is why you and I talk
that
about
that is why
the,
it matters about Nebraska.
Value. Right.
That's why it matters about Nebraska's 3-0 in Big Ten play because of a brand.
Yeah.
They're ahead of Miami.
No question.
They're ahead of BYU. They're ahead of
no
Cincinnati because it says Cornhuskers.
Yes. Same would be true if it were Penn State or Michigan.
Yep.
They'd be ranked.
And that's
I mean,
why
honestly,
it matters,
if
people.
If it were Penn State or Michigan, they'd be ranked fifth.
Yeah.
Oklahoma, they're up to number 18, higher or lower.
So did they beat – Iowa State beat them, right?
Correct.
I think Iowa State beat them. So I think both Iowa State and Oklahoma need to vault – both of them need to vault ahead of Marshall, Coastal Carolina, Oklahoma State, and be – I don't know what to do with them with Wisconsin. I don't know what to make of Wisconsin. I mean, they played one game. It was so long ago. It's and who knows what they're going to look like whenever they get back. But I think they need to be ranked higher, but I think Iowa State's got to go with them.
I'm with you. I mean, how is Coastal Carolina at 15?
Right.
We talked about it. We know why, but I just it feels just right to say it. I mean, right? Oklahoma
right.
should be up there. They're starting to play better, but it's okay. It's the Big 12 is so on the back burner for me.
They're done. They're out.
Yeah, it's hard
they're
to
out. In every way
it's hard to
out.
Even think yeah. about them.
Georgia fell to 12th after their loss to Florida. Higher or lower?
They got a really good defense, but they, I mean, their quarterback, boy, does their quarterback hold them back.
Their
right?
quarterback situation is a nightmare. You see why they went so hard after the Wake Forest transfer, who eventually opted out.
Yep.
I think one of the great what-ifs in the history of their program is what if we would have just kept Justin Fields and played him over Fromm rather than play the Fromm loyalty card. I think it's one of the greatest what-ifs because if Justin Fields is on this Georgia team the last 2 years.
Yep.
Well, first of all, I don't think he wouldn't have been developed the way that he has been here.
That's the other thing, right? That's what we talk about. Right. It's not just the kids. How are they being developed?
How are they being developed?
How are they
the
being
idea,
used?
Though, that you would be in a situation where you play – and that the kid that transferred from – the Daniels kid who transferred from USC must be terrible, right? Is he hurt? What's the problem? Like, they keep that playing that Bennett kid. They played Mathis. But they're lost at quarterback. Absolutely lost.
USC is 1-0. They're 20th or something. I don't know. Who cares? Higher or lower?
They won in thrilling fashion.
I believe we
Herm.
Had that.
We did
that
have
Herm.
It. Herm would play well, and they were up big. They were up two scores. USC was down two scores and came back to win. The Slovis kid looked nice at quarterback. That was a really big win for USC, though, to get some momentum. They've started season slow. And to come back and beat Arizona State, that's a nice win for them.
I didn't watch the game at all. How was it on the Big Noon? Was it?
It was good. It was. I mean, it's that uniform, right? It's cool to see that uniform.
It
they
is.
Look great. And so
it is.
We were following. My oldest son pays attention to Southern Cal a little bit, so we were following it on the golf course in the second half as they came back. And so it was, that was cool to see. But in terms of should they be ranked higher, like I think they're probably better than SMU. But how do you? You know, we're doing this. How do you compare a team that's played 8 games to a team that's played 1?
Can't.
It's so difficult to make sense of this.
That's why when you turn on, like, even when I looked up the poll and I see, hold on, man, how does Ohio State only have one vote? And I say, oh, well, that's why, because we're 3-0 only, and everyone else is 7-6-0. So it's tough. How do you evaluate that?
Yeah,
my eye test can only tell me so much.
I'll tell you what, the Pac-12 won pretty big because Oregon was impressive on ABC on Sunday. I think Saturday night, obviously everyone was watching our game and they were watching Notre Dame and Clemson. But Oregon was impressive on Saturday night, and I think USC winning. That's back to that brand conversation. Oregon and USC are acceptable brands for the Pac-12
yep.
for people to pay attention to. So that was big that they both got off to 1-0 starts.
Yep.
I'll throw one more at you. Northwestern, they're 23 now. They're 3-0. Higher or lower?
I think that they should be higher just on teams that they would beat, but I'm not putting them ahead of Southern Cal. I'm not putting them ahead of, you know.
You can put them,
one,
beating you can put
Texas?
Them ahead of Hugh Freeze and Liberty.
Yeah, I'll move them up one. But again, it's the brand, right? It's the brand. That's why the West matters. Purdue's also 3-0, but they didn't have the opportunity, or 2-0, didn't have the opportunity to play Wisconsin this week. Yeah. And you're like, those are the leaders of the West.
Yeah.
I mean, Wisconsin, undefeated, 1-0.
Right.
Northwestern's yet 3-0 in the West. Get this, Northwestern is 3-0 in the Big Ten West. In an all-conference schedule, they're 23rd. Wisconsin is 1-0, and their only win is at home against Illinois, and they're 13th. Yeah. Brand matter.
Oh, critical. They're absolutely critical. We like to visit with Austin Ward every single Monday on a Reaction Monday, and we'll do that coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Every Monday during football season is a time for reaction. Some people may call it Reaction Monday, and we're those people. Reaction Monday.
Sponsored by Taco Bell.
The Fan. It's First Friday Somewhere.
That's a big sense of freedom.
You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
We like to do it every Action Monday. Visit with our good buddy Austin Ward with Letterman Row, and we do so right now on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Austin, I suppose guilty at 35 of 3 in going, all right, three things. I'm going to go enjoy an evening with my wife and keep an eye on this out of the corner of my eye. Look, it was never in doubt, but there is this feeling of, did we leave them hang around? We didn't get to see the backup quarterback. I tend to think you're up 35-3, and you probably take the foot off the gas a little bit. And Greg did a great job of throwing everything at him. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, I was more guilty of that than you were, Bo, because I published my snap judgments that normally go at the final gun. I published them at halftime. So,
you and I, we're in it together.
Yeah, so if people want to, you know, blame me, I'll take my share of the blame for that. I look at that game, and I think it is more about, you know, Greg Schiano sending a message that he was going to fight, he was going to pull out bags of tricks and trying to, you know, deliver this message to his team that he was there for them and believes in them, rather than an indictment or, you know, that's too strong. Just rather that there was some sort of problem with the way Ohio State handled the second half. In an empty stadium at night against a team that they were up 32 points against. You know, always, we say this every Monday, you know, Reaction Monday on this show, that we're going to be nitpicking and measuring them against, you know, Alabama or Notre Dame or Clemson. I mean, and now adding Notre Dame to that conversation. And if you want to be critical of that third and fourth quarter, that's fine. To me, I just chalk it up as a game that was over, an unusual week, a bunch of trick plays, and that, you know, it's not some sort of revealing, you know, 30 minutes for Ohio State that they have real problems to address. I don't think that they do, and I think that the 35-3 part is probably more informative than for the Buckeyes than what happened after that.
Austin, what's the one area on offense and defense for you that you say, you know what, if we don't get better here, this might hurt us when it comes to college football playoff. There's nobody in our conference that if we just act accordingly is going to be able to stop Justin in the wideouts. But as I look, I'm like, okay, we throw the ball really well. Running game looks different, right? It's not last year, but it looks different. Doesn't mean it's not successful. It just looks different. Are we really elite at protection? You know, have we played an elite D line to where we're like, gosh, you shut down Penn State and they're studs on the outside, but yet Rutgers kind of gets home a couple times. And then defensively, you're like, can we rush with four? Can we get to the quarterback with four? And nothing really just jumps out at me defensively. They're great. They're good as far as, like, they got tons of talent. But just what concerns you as you think about, again, and it stinks because we still have so many games left, but we're judging ourselves against the Notre Dames, Clemsons, and Bamas.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is tough for me, James, because it's incomplete and tough to grade. Like, I think that the running backs, I expected them to play better. We'll see. You know, Trey Sermon was finding a little bit of that next gear in the fourth quarter on that drive. I think he had 64 yards before he got hurt, and that sort of derailed that momentum. Steel Chambers went in the game and fumbled. And, you know, I think that group has not done through 3 weeks what I expected it could. But the flip side to that, when I try to, you know, evaluate it more completely, is that Justin Fields is their most dangerous rusher. And Ohio State, if they were in big games, you know, they would let him go. You saw how easily he scored once he kept it on the zone read on Saturday night in the first half. You know, when you get to those situations where you know it's a dogfight, you know, Ryan Day calls them the talent equated game, you know, it's going to be easier for those running backs if they're running, you know, if there's another threat in the backfield, then it's Justin Fields running away from people. And I think that the rushing attack can certainly get better, but I also think that it will. Just because you have some element that you haven't even shown yet. Defensively, I think there were a lot more missed tackles than I would have anticipated on Saturday night. I think you look at the secondary and maybe that safety position as a whole. The one play that really squirted out, this, you know, fake the snap over the head and direct snap to the running back. You know, Marcus Hooker had a chance to get that on the ground, and I think those of us that have, you know, watched Jordan Fuller the last couple of years expected that an Ohio State safety would just snuff that play out after 10 or 15 yards and you go to the next play. So that's a position, I think, safety. And then, you know, that third cornerback that Ohio State's still looking at, this is an important week for that, because if there's something that Maryland can do well, you know, they've shown with Tagovailoa and Rakim Jarrett that passing attack, they can move the ball on people. So the secondary for Ohio State definitely be, you know, under the microscope this week.
Austin, acknowledging that we have been just ridiculously spoiled, but James and I were talking about this, and I don't see a stud, like a standout, like defensive player of the year in the Big Ten. And we've been Shaziers and Boses and Chase Young and Malik Hooker, and we've had these guys, you know, a steady diet, even going back to James's time and AJ and James and all these guys who've been these first-team mm-hmm. All-Americans and lock them in. And I don't see it yet on this defense. Is there a candidate to emerge who hasn't yet in your mind, or who is most likely to be kind of that it's on me, I got it this week?
Yeah, it's interesting, because some of the guys that I would have thrown out to you for that, they're part of rotations and their stats aren't blown away. And I know that didn't stop a Chase Young or a Bosa, but, you know, Pete Warner is playing at such a high level. James can speak on it much more, you know, intimately maybe than I could, but that guy, you can count on him to do almost anything and ask him to do anything a linebacker can do. And maybe it sometimes goes underappreciated, but I think that the coaching staff recognize it, and I'm trying to get better at that. He might not always have flashy stats, but, man, they build so much of what they do defensively around Pete Warner. He's a special player. And then it's, you know, Tommy Togia and Haskell Garrett. We were talking 3 weeks ago on your show about where's that unit that you're uncertain about, and I talked about defensive tackle. I mean, those guys have emphatically answered the bell there, that they are, you know, they're – as good as can be, and they're not going to get three sacks every week like Togiai, and sometimes that's the part. Like, I'm talking about two positions or two guys where they might not ever put up truly crazy statistics, but I bet that the NFL scouts are paying attention to what Pete Warren, Tommy Togiai, and Haskell Garrett have done these first 3 weeks. And look, if you have an entire silver bullet unit that I know that, you know, I got questions about if there were problems, but with this defense and comparisons to the big plays they gave up 2 years ago, they've played three halves so far this year in three games where they didn't allow a touchdown. I think that unit overall is pretty healthy.
Yeah, they're great, and really the only concern that I have, Austin, as you look at it, is as the talent evens out, right, in the college football playoff, if you have to start sending pressure to get pressure on a quarterback, can you hold up on the back end? That's the only thing, and we won't know. Yeah. I don't think we'll really know until then. I want to take you around the Big Ten real quick, Austin. As you look around, and we mentioned it just last segment when we were doing our AP poll, higher or lower and all that stuff, you got Indiana at 10-0, at number 10, but 3-0, right? They're sitting right there. Yep. We're talking about the brands of the West and how they're not there for us. Northwestern, 3-0, and they're down at, 23 chops, something like that. Anyway, if those teams are Nebraska instead, or Penn State, or Michigan, some of our well-known teams, they're up there at 5. They're up there at 6. The hard reality is we're going to play Indiana, probably beat them by 21 or 24, and then they'll be dropped down to the 20s. But yet Miami's sitting there with one loss, and they lost to Clemson, but they're the U, so they're up there at 9. Is this bad for the conference that our big heavyweights, or do you view it as some other people I've talked to in the last few days say that they think it's good for the conference, all these other teams are better? Where do you stand on it?
Yeah, I think that it's a reflection of the conference as a whole becoming more competitive and answering the challenge that if you don't invest, if you don't recruit better, you will never catch Ohio State ever. Some teams are doing it better than others. You know, I think that when you look on the other side of the Ohio State rivalry, you have to take a long, hard look and decide almost right now if that's the guy to get it there, because Michigan will have more resources. They might not have as many recruits right in their backyard as Ohio State does, but that's also not a problem for Penn State. And James Franklin is whiffing on all of the top prospects in the state of Pennsylvania. I think it's bad for the overall perception of the league if Michigan and Penn State are down and certainly playing at the level they are now. You can also at the same time give credit to what Indiana is doing, and that, you know, maybe people will be slow to realize how good they are, and that could be short-circuited in 10 days or so. I don't want Bo to kick you and I off the show by talking about how big that matchup is going to be. But, you know, but that's, you know, sometimes because of the brand names, like, they really matter in college football to the perception. That's just the way it is. And it's hard for people to recognize that. And especially in this year, where we're still only dealing with the sample size of three games, and we don't even know how good Michigan and Penn State really are to how to properly evaluate even Indiana's win. It's just, it's a super weird year all the way around.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I'll never kick you off the air, buddy, I promise you. Appreciate your time as always.
I'm happy to give it to you guys every Monday.
Always good talking to Austin Ward of Letterman Row. He joined on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. Yeah, I mean, the branding's big. It's huge. It's huge. Yeah. It shapes your perception. It's so hard to bust through. You think of programs trying to build something out of nothing, and it's so hard to do it, to be able to bust through that. We hit three things on a Reaction Monday up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Follow us on Twitter at 971TheFan and vote in the fan poll.
Sponsored by Reichert Ford.
Solving the world's problems one dumb question at a time. The Fan. Two men complaining about first world problems.
You're not getting the point, kid.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, three things on a Reaction Monday edition. Hit it, Chops.
One, two, one, two. Three things with Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Sponsored by Green & Sons, the premier Kubota dealership in Central Ohio. Located in Marysville and Mount Sterling. Visit greenandsons.com today.
Man, with heavy heart, rest in peace to Alex Trebek, the Jeopardy host for so many years, and one of the last, I think, guys in a line of television personalities who have been with us for our entire lives. And he became that show. I mean, he used to have, you know, network news anchors, Cronkite and these guys who were there forever, Jennings and others who were there forever, Brokaw, rather even. And now there aren't that many of those out there. Things get turned over often. But he and Sajak certainly are, and he really became Jeopardy. As I don't even know where that show is going to go without him. I don't know if there's plans or not, but he is just an incredibly iconic figure, in my life and in many's, obviously. And so, a sad passing over the weekend.
Well said out of you, Bo. My first thing, Common Man, we live in the same neighborhood, dropped off a nice little package of fan mail, as the studio now it has moved, and we are not That's welcome right. back until January, maybe, you know, who
maybe.
Knows.
Allegedly.
But,
yeah.
Allegedly. But anyway, as that all happens, anyway, he drops off a bunch of the fan mail, so I go through the whole box of it, and I'm going, there's a gift card in there from Canes of Central Ohio saying, sorry about the passing of your father. I appreciate it. $100 of Canes. I'm juiced That's about that. Thank you.
Good job out of them. My first thing, we just keep knocking things out. I got my suit delivered. We ordered our wedding bands. The honeymoon tickets are paid for.
She's running out of time.
We're taking care of that. So finishing up all the final details. She's ordering the last of the decorations, all the little things she wants to put together. So it's all coming together. The wedding is going to happen. Very excited. Getting everything in line.
She's still got a couple months, Chops. Don't be so chesty. Number two for me, it is Masters Week. Are you kidding? Masters Week. It does feel like it outside right now, but I am so curious to see that course in November and what the foliage looks like. I think it could be spectacular, but obviously the flowers won't be there, I wouldn't think. I'm sure they'll bring some in, but I'm just fascinated to see what that course looks like this time of year. I'm also fascinated to see if the ratings, how they withstand college football and NFL Sunday.
Very true. And my uncle lives in Georgia, and he says that this is by far, like, end of October, early November is by far the best time to live there. So,
weather's,
you know,
should be perfect.
Maybe we'll get that displayed beautifully. Anyway, my second thing here, my Twitter getting hacked has been one of the most extremely frustrating but also relaxing things I've ever been a part of. When you get the email that says your account has been logged in from Manhattan, New York, is this you? Link, nope, not me. Reset password, click on it, and it sends it to a total different email address. They had already beat you to it. Oh, is that frustrating? But
Where do you go from there?
Well, you try to email Twitter. That's all they do. There's no phone numbers. It's just email.
Yeah, sure not.
And, we'll get back to you. Sure you will. We have a high volume right now. Oh, what could Twitter possibly be monitoring? Election content? All that stuff? Okay, yeah. My buddy got hacked two months ago. He said still haven't heard from Twitter. Okay.
Jeez.
So anyway, I tried calling the Rams. Rams security guy calls the NFL security guy, their head of cyber over there. We'll see if that works. But I'm not really missing it, to be honest. It's actually helped me relax a whole lot with all of this madness going on the line.
On the line, yeah.
My second thing, I convinced J-Lo to put up the Christmas decorations this weekend. We put all the pumpkins away. We got the garland out. We put the tree up. We got ornaments on it. And then Sunday evening, yesterday, I convinced her to watch a Christmas movie. It's all coming to plan. It's all rolling over.
So early. Josh.
Everybody always says, don't skip over Thanksgiving. It's like, I'll do Thanksgiving on that day. What am I going to do outside of that? It's Christmas time.
Jeez, it's really early. Finally for me, what a weekend. Beautiful weather. We did take advantage. Good job out of us, me and the boys. We did golf on Saturday afternoon, which is a big win. And then last night, laser tag in the dark. Me and Bootsy against Black Cobra and Beamsy. An upset. They upset us. Three-game series. They won two games. We won one. I got to get Bootsy to be a little more comfortable staying in his fort at night. He wants to come with me in the woods.
Yeah.
And it's a fail every time he gets exposed. And I got to get him to understand that if he stays in that fort, there's a recipe for success there for us. But we'll take the L.
Gosh, just living the ultimate life. I mean, we got golf course. a full obstacle, laser tag game in the backyard, multiple forts.
That's right.
I mean, talk about just living the dream. My goodness. My last thing, look, the assembly of the nursery is almost complete. There has been a bag packed. Shelly's been having so many, like, Braxton Hicks, which are contractions. Mm-hmm. For those who don't know, they're contractions that aren't the real contractions. Yep. But anyway, she's had so many of them. She goes, I have no idea when I'm actually going to go into labor. She's not due till mid-January, but she's like, as we get near December, she's like, you might want to have a bag packed, which then leads to Chop's point. We usually wait till after Thanksgiving to decorate for Christmas, right? We got a whole system. We have the fall decorations, we have our Thanksgiving decorations, and boom, then it's Christmas, last till the new year, boom, put them away. But I'm not sure, she might have to go a little bit early on this, because she's getting to the point of being so uncomfortable that she's not going to want to put stuff up, you know, come December, and Lord knows I can't do it alone. So there's nothing I can really do alone. So regardless, we might have to jump into that chopper, and we might have to do the Christmas decorations here coming up earlier than we'd like.
You can leave Christmas up till February, too. That's okay.
No, it's not.
My last thing.
No, it's not. You got to take it down. Once we celebrate 21, which will be the greatest celebration ever.
Yeah.
My last thing real quick. Check out the latest Nerd Association. This was a fun one. It was our 25th episode.
You can't help yourself.
At the end of October, we went over pop culture hot takes, and as we did 10 of them, and as we did each one, it was inspired by Hot Ones, the web series. We did a hotter hot sauce each time on a tortilla chip, and so near the end it gets a little dicey trying to talk through that, but it was a lot of fun to record.
Great job of self-promotion out of you, Chopper. Good job. All right, what do we have? We have Rothman and Ice coming up next. We are back tomorrow for more fun. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while. Call